Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Raw.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Fibber McGee and Molly,
written by Don Quinn,
with music by the King's Band and Silly Mills Orchestra. It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denny.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life! Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
Now here is your guide, these adventures of mine.
Hurry up and see you this
Hey, everyone. Merry Christmas and have a happy and safe New Year. And I hope you're able to be with your family and friends or just family, or maybe you're thinking of your family because you can't be with them. But then there's always Zoom. You can always Zoom them if you want, if you can't be with them. And this is a special Christmas episode that I'm putting together for you. See, I work so far ahead that I become behind. I know that doesn't sound possible, that I work so far ahead of Buck Benny that I'm behind, but in this case, I am, because I'm actually putting out more shows than I did last year. And last year when I did shows, I put out more shows than I did the year before and before that. So I've been getting and doing more shows every year since I've been working all these 7 years with Buck Benny. So anyway, so it's hard for me to explain how I can be so far ahead and yet behind on Christmas shows. I don't know. I really don't know how that happened. But be that as it may, so what I did was I went forward, because I was in November shows and October shows, that I thought I would go forward in time to the December shows, and I found two Fibber McGee and Molly's from 1945, from December 18th and December 25th. And so the episode from December 18th is The White Christmas Tree. And in that episode, you'll hear at the beginning how Fibber is dickering with this man over a Christmas tree. Now, the man that Fibber is dickering with is actually Jim Jordan's son, Jim Jordan Jr., who worked on the Fibber McGee and Molly show, and he may have worked on some shows on his own away from Fibber McGee and Molly, but usually he worked with his parents on the Fibber McGee and Molly show. Unfortunately, he never got credited for any of the work he did. As a matter of fact, I think his sister also worked on the Fibber McGee and Molly show, and she used to play some parts, I think, mostly parts and working in stores or something like that, where she was where she waited on customers. And I don't remember her name exactly, but she was also in her parents' show, Fibber McGee and Molly. And then, so that's all I'm going to tell you about the White Christmas Tree episode. And as of the December 25th episode of 1945, the episode is entitled, What Is It? And it has to do with a gift that Doc Gamble had dropped off to the McGees as his special Christmas present to them. And that's all I'm going to say about that. You'll get the idea pretty quick what's going on with that episode. And after that are two episodes of My Favorite Husband, one from December 16th, 1950, and it's called Christmas Cards. It actually is called Christmas Card Pictures, but I listened to the episode and has nothing to do with pictures. So it's Christmas Cards. That's the name of the episode. And the one after that, from December 23rd, 1950, is Christmas Stag Party. Now, when I got the episode, it was named Christmas Stag. And that's not exactly what it is. It has nothing to do with an animal. This has to do with a Christmas stag party that's not the Coopers that are going to a stag party. It's just the men of the two couples want to go to this stag party. I don't know why. It's not like they're getting shot at sunrise and they want to celebrate by going to a stag party before they get shot at sunrise. I mean, Christmas isn't that bad. But anyway, there's that episode. And then we have a classic episode of Our Miss Brooks from December 24th, Christmas Eve, 1950. And the episode is entitled Magic Christmas Tree. This is one of my favorite Our Miss Brooks episodes, because it involves magic, it involves wishes, and it involves love. All three components would be ideal for a Christmas episode. Any one of those components would be ideal for a Christmas episode, but there's all three combined for a Christmas episode, which really makes this episode very, very special. So I love this episode, and Our Miss Brooks gets a thrill in this episode, so listen for that. And after that is You Bet Your Life from December 20th of 1950. And the secret word is Ford. Now, I don't know if they mention Christmas in this episode, but it's from the same era as My Favorite Husband and Our Miss Brooks from 1950. But I don't know if they're going to mention Christmas, because You Bet Your Life filmed and recorded, I want to say, 2 months in advance. So it was up to the production company to keep track of when the show would air, but basically they would kind of steer clear of mentioning the holiday, although I probably picked the wrong episode, because the one after this is from December 27th of 1950, and maybe then they will mention a Christmas episode. Would be just my luck. But anyway, I picked this December 20th episode figuring that they might mention Christmas in this episode. I hope so. But either way, it's a good episode, and the secret word is floor, F-L-O-O-R. Listen to that. And there was no Halls of Ivy, because I played for you the holiday episode of Halls of Ivy last week, but there was really no mention, except very lightly, about Christmas. They just weren't the type of show to recognize all the holidays when they were to appear in the schedule of their recording of the Halls of Ivy. So they kind of steered clear of doing that, which is probably why they won so many awards for their episodes. But anyway, enjoy all six of these shows. That's 3 hours worth of shows that I'm presenting to you, that I'm giving to you as a Christmas bonus. And then next week we'll go all the way back to November and October and finish out those episodes. And when we get to these episodes, I will skip them. because I've already played them now. I hope you understand that. If you do understand it, email me and explain it to me so I understand it, okay? So anyway, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to everyone. Be safe. Be cautious. Wear your mask when you go outside. Do all the right stuff the CDC asked you so you can come back and see what I have to offer next week. Enjoy.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. Things are you most anxious to have in your home? Aren't they beauty and cleanliness? Well, think for a moment how easily and inexpensively you can have both beauty and cleanliness just with an occasional application of genuine Johnson's wax to your floors, furniture, and woodwork. A rich, mellow, polished wax surface is a thing of beauty in itself. The wax brings out the grain and beauty of the wood. It adds a soft luster to leather, linoleum, and metal surfaces. And, of course, this tough wax film protects these surfaces against wear, dirt, and moisture. Dust and dirt do not adhere readily to a wax-polished surface. So cleaning is not only easier, but a waxed home is actually cleaner and more sanitary. Johnson's wax is of the very finest quality and long-wearing. The cost is really very little. So why not practice protective housekeeping in your home with genuine Johnson's wax? Dealers everywhere carry it. Certain people who simply won't admit that nature does anything right. They are the kind who gild cattails, paint Whose Little Tootsie Are You on the shells of baby turtles, and clip poodle dogs to look like anemic lions. Here's one of those people now, as we meet Fibber McGee and Molly.
Hey, Fred, how much you charge me to paint this Christmas tree white?
Why do you want it white, McGee?
What do you mean, why do I want it white? You got 100 trees in this lot you've painted white.
Yeah, and I think they're horrible. But some people like them that way.
Never mind the artistic comment, Fred. How much?
$10.
$10? To spray a little white paint on this half-pint tree? Who do you think you are, Rembrandt? Looky here, maybe you didn't understand, Fritz. I want this tree painted white, not gold-plated.
$10.
You're a pirate, and I'll bet you've made $200 already today.
You're a cheapskate, and I've made $340.
You're a robber, and you want to sell a half interest in this joint?
You're a stoop, and I wouldn't sell my own mother a half interest.
You're a low-down no. The dirty swindler. $10 to spray a little tree white. The rat. Cheating people right and left, making $400 a day. The chiseler. I don't know whether to report him to the OPA or make him a better offer for a half interest. Low-down chiseler.
What's the matter, McGee, this time?
It's that guy Fred Corrigan that runs the Christmas tree lot at 14th and Oak. That dirty pine broker. Wanted to charge me $10 to paint our Christmas tree white.
Well, that does seem a little high, dearie. But think of the work there is to it. Putting all those needles back on after the paint dries.
They don't take the needles off. They just spray the trees. Whish, whish, whish. That's all there is to it.
Well, if wishing will make it so, why don't you do it yourself?
If it's a $10 job, I can't afford to pay myself that much. Besides, I haven't got a paint spray, so... Hey! Haven't we got
paint spray attachment on the vacuum cleaner?
Oh, dear.
Oh, my gosh. I can have that tree painted white before you can say, don't it look awful?
Now, McGee, please, I realize we need the house painted, but not on the inside. Let's leave the tree green.
Oh, you love a white one, Snooky. It's the modern thing. Nobody uses green trees anymore. They're outmoded.
Hmm. You don't say. Well, tell me, Salvador. What color snow are people using this year? Chartreuse?
No kidding, Molly. White Christmas trees are all the rage. Everybody.
They must be. They throw me into one. Now, look, sweetheart. Just put the tree up and trim it. I love a green Christmas tree. Don't you, Alice?
Don't I what, Mrs. McGee?
Look, Molly, I'll put it up to Alice fair and square and let her give an opinion. Here's the preposition, kid. If you were going to have a Christmas tree, which would you rather have? A dusty, drab, dirty old green one or a bright, snappy, glistening white one?
Which, Alice?
Mistletoe.
No. Mistletoe. What an answer.
Well, jeepers, don't you like to hang up a little bouquet of mistletoe, Mr. McGee?
Oh, he's too shy, Alice.
I am not shy. What good is mistletoe? Catch somebody under it, and it's either somebody you can kiss anyway, like your wife, or you get a slap in the chop before you can point up to it. Mistletoe, bah. That's just poison ivy with berries.
Well, we'll put some up, Alice, and you'll see who manages to spend most of his time loitering around beneath it. But honestly now, dear, do you like a white Christmas tree?
Well, I like them all, Mrs. McGee. I don't care if they're purple. Gertrude always has a white one, though, and she likes them.
Who's Gertrude? We know her.
Oh, she's the boy who always rides past here in the cream-colored Cadillac and honks his horn sister.
Well, himself here used to go with a man who owned a Stutz Bearcat's niece.
Yeah. Yeah, but I gave her up for an old guy with a broken-down Maxwell's daughter.
But honestly now, Alice, don't you really prefer a white Christmas tree?
Well, I got awfully tired of them, Mr. McGee. When I was a little girl, my father gave us kids some little tiny paintbrushes and told us to paint a Christmas tree white.
Heavenly days. Wow. It must have taken you children a long time to paint a tree with little brushes. How long did it take, Alice?
Oh, we never did get it finished. But it kept us off the streets till we were 18 years old. Well, I gotta wrap some presents. See you later.
Right, kid. How all that lovely golden hair can grow out of that solid bone, I'll never
know. Oh, she's awfully sweet, though, McGee. There isn't a mean thought in Alice's head.
No, nor any other kind. Well, this ain't getting my tree sprayed.
Where'd you leave the tree, dearie?
Out in front. I can attach the vacuum cleaner cord from the porch light. Now, let me see if I get the porch...
Come in. Oh, hello there, Dr. Gamble.
Hello, Molly. How are you today, pantry paunch?
Fine, Jumbo, fine. You out spreading a little Christmas cheer, telling your patients you're going to retire?
Oh. He's not going to retire for years yet, are you, Doctor?
My dear, I will retire on that far distant day when I can write a personal check for $400 and not have the hired help at the Fourth National Bank burst into hysterical laughter.
Why, go on, you old miser. You got that much buried under a loose brick in the fireplace right now. The trouble with you is you got more affection for a dollar than my wife has for a pound of butter. And that's the love match of the year, Fatso.
You have no right to say that, though, McGee. Dr. Gamble does more private charity work than anybody in town.
Certainly. I'm a very noble character. When I walk down the street, flowers spring into bloom. Oh. Birds burst into song, and taxicabs honk twice before they try to kill me. Well, I gotta run along now. This is my busy season, you know.
I suppose the children keep you pretty busy around Christmas time, Doctor, huh?
No, it's the so-called grown-ups, my dear.
Huh?
This is the silly season when 200-pound men start climbing 49-cent stepladders to wire dime store angels to the tops of $3 Christmas trees and wind up in a $500 plastic cast. Pennywise and compound fracture foolish.
Don't you want to stick around and watch me trim our Christmas tree, Doc? I'm painting it white.
Well, you don't have to do that, Skipwit.
Huh?
When I put my gift for you under it, it'll turn white.
Billy Mills and the Orchestra and the Parade of the Wooden Soldiers. ¶¶
clogs up like a sentimental woman at a sad movie.
What seems to be the matter, dear?
This paint spray goes along all right for a minute, then it chokes up. And when it comes loose again, it throws a blob of paint that'd knock IQ out of the balcony.
Well, found it on the porch steps. And maybe that'll loosen it up.
Okay, I will.
There, now try it.
Okay.
Oh, heavenly days, Mickey. You almost hit me with that.
I'm sorry, kiddo. I didn't know it was loaded. Well, here we go. There, now, just... Dad ratted it, done it again. Clogged up.
Well, hurry up and get the job finished, Mickey. It's colder than a lineman's lunch out here.
Well, you go on in the house if you want. I can handle this all right.
No, I've got to stay out here and tell people who you are.
Huh?
You get a little more of that white paint on you and they'll think you're a badly constructed snowman.
Does it? Now, I'll have this tree sprayed before you can...
Watch your aim, dearie.
Huh?
No, you better shut it off. Here comes Mrs. Carstairs.
Oh.
Hello there, Mrs. Carstairs. Won't you come in the house and have a slug of tea?
No, thank you, my dear. I am just out walking my Pekingese and must hurry along.
What Pekingese, Carstairs? I don't see him.
Oh, it was too cold for him to come along, Mr. McGee. As long as one of us goes out, he's satisfied.
Ah, it's really a sweet little dog, Millicent, from what I've seen of him.
Personally, I wouldn't have one of them four-legged dust mops as a gift. Give me a man-sized dog. I ever tell you about the hunting dog I had once, Carson, by the name of Durante?
Durante?
Yeah, what a nose that dog had. Never forget one time we were walking through the woods. Me and my dog, pipe over my shoulder, gun in my mouth.
What was that again?
Gun over my shoulder and pipe in my mouth, when all of a sudden Durante freezes. He's on point. Nose quivering, tail out like a ramrod. 1 foot in the air. I raises my gun, walks slowly forward, and there, not 10 feet away, was a guy sitting on a stump.
That was quite a dog, Mr. McGee. Trained to flush game wardens, was he?
No, sir. I bawled the dog out, and then I was never so ashamed in my life. It was the smartest thing he'd ever done.
Why?
Well, sir, I got talking to the guy, and you know what? His name was Partridge.
Oh.
Henry W. Partridge. Wasn't that wonderful, Carsty?
No, I don't think that's so remarkable, Mr. McGee. In the light of what a police dog of mine once did.
What was that, Millicent? After all, it's so cold out tonight, the bologna won't spoil.
Well, this dog of ours was extremely intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
One day I had him in the post office, and I noticed he was staring at the police posters on the wall. Suddenly he dashed out the door and was gone.
Probably went out to steal an apple off a fruit stand, Carsty.
No. When I got home, he was gripping our butler by the vest pocket and was barking into the telephone, which he'd knocked off the table. When the police arrived, it turned out that Jarvis was wanted by the authorities in 3 states.
Yes, but why was your dog holding him by the vest pocket, Millicent?
That was where our butler kept his fountain pen. You see, he was wanted for forgery. Well, so nice to see you. Good evening.
Who does she think she's kidding? I don't believe a word of that stuff. I'll bet she made that whole thing up.
Well, never mind her, dearie. Get busy with that paint before it freezes solid,
huh?
Eh?
Oh, gee, it might have been. Well, back to work. Ah, there she blows. Yeah.
Stopped up again, McGee?
Yeah, the doggone thing. I only got about a third of this tree sprayed, too. Maybe if... Hey.
What?
How could Carstairs' dog be gripping the butler by the vest and barking into the phone at the same time?
Why, she didn't say he was gripping the butler with his teeth, dearie.
Huh?
You know, after all, a dog as smart as that could hold him down with one hind paw, dial the police station with the other, and use his front feet to take fingerprints.
Yeah, maybe, but how'd you... Oh, well, why should I worry? Ah, that's better yet.
You're getting
that's
more paint on yourself than you are on the tree, McGee.
Well, the wind keeps changing. They ought to make these paint sprays with a weather vane on them. By George, hip.
Ah, oh, dear. In the time you've taken to get this tree a dirty gray, pet, I could have whitewashed the Kaibab National Forest with a flip gun.
Well, doggone it, I don't see...
Hello, folks, what's going on
here? Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junior, pull up a front step and give yourself a three-point landing.
There you want your Christmas tree painted white, Mr. Wilcox. Trot home and get it.
Yeah, I won't be out here very long, Junie, as soon as I adjust the nozzle on this paint.
Hey, wait a minute, Mac. Do you mean to stand there like a front man for painter's colic and tell me you're actually going to ruin that pretty little tree with white paint? Ruining that refugee from the forest primeval? Despoiling a magnificent evergreen?
Ah, skip the dramatics, Junior. We know you memorized Evangeline in high school.
And you played the heavy in the Chautauqua Company of Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, too, didn't you, Mr. Wilcox?
The juvenile lead, if you please. I also had three seasons of Shakespeare.
A likely story. When you play Shakespeare, son, that's when Othello needs a friend.
Everyone in Omaha, I'll have you know, said I was another Barrymore.
Hmm.
Why, when I came out in my tights and said, oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I.
You can say that again.
Now, hush, McGee, I love Shakespeare. Go on, Mr. Wilcox.
Is it not monstrous that this player here, seeing a lady forced to menial task and seeing such drudgery, would not then dispense a thing called Johnson's glow coat? Forsooth, a goodly fluid, which spread upon the scullery linoleum, would thus eliminate the scrub. No rub, no bar. Just pour it on, and in one-third the time it takes for our glass to turn, it dries.
If Shakespeare ain't in the public domain, this two-bit Orson Welles is going to be sued for $9 million.
Ah, yes, it dries. And so mirror-like it gleams. The porridge spilled, wiped off, leaves not a single spot. The labor saved, the hours gained, the beauty seen. 'Tis glow coat. Beloved by chatelaine and serving wench alike. Your nearest dealer.
Hey, now wait a minute, Mr. Wilcox. Is that in Hamlet?
My dear girl, it's in every hamlet, every village, town, city, and metropolis. Every place where a housewife takes pride in the appearance of her kitchen. And if I don't get back to the office in the next 10 minutes, I'll find myself back in Chautauqua. So long, kid.
There goes the biggest ham I've seen since Blue Boy went to the state fair. He better be careful or he'll wind up on a platter with an apple in his mouth. Now, but this ain't getting my tree sprayed.
Well, hurry up. You almost got it done now.
Yeah. Let's see, I get her all loosened up good. Ah, there she goes. Ah, this is the best it's been yet.
Yes.
Look how white the tree is getting, Molly.
There's one question I'd like to ask you, McGee. Are you sure?
Don't bother me now, kiddo. I'm doing too good. Hot dog. Ain't that getting beautiful? I finally got this spray gun working perfect.
I know, but look, McGee, I've been wanting to ask you if...
Later, Tootsie, later. I'm just about finished now. Just up there a little bit. Ah, oh, gee, I'm through. All done. And believe me, that's the whitest white Christmas tree you'll ever see. Now, won't you admit this is a mighty pretty effect, baby?
Yes, if you like that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll go and make some hot coffee, dearie.
Okay.
McGee?
Huh?
Whose Christmas tree is this on the front porch?
Oh, that's the one I bought this morning that I'm going to paint white. What? Oh, my gosh, what tree did I paint?
The one that's been growing there in the yard all these years.
If I ain't the dumbest bloke that ever drew breath. A wise guy. A know-it-all. Can't tell one tree from another. One that's growing and one that ain't. I'm a sapit. I'm a brainless, incompetent, ham-handed butterfingers. If I wasn't so stupid, I'd never let me sit here and insult myself like this. Dad rat.
Oh, hi, mister. What's the matter?
I know that voice. Is that you, Teeny?
Sure it is, I betcha.
Hmm.
What you sitting there with your head in your hands for, mister? Got a headache? Want me to get you an aspirin, hmm? Want me to, hmm?
No, thanks, sis. Medicine won't touch the kind of headache I got. I just busted my ego in four places.
Gee, I'm sorry, mister.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Who did that?
Huh? Who did what?
Who painted that tree white?
Hmm?
Gee, is that ever beautiful?
Yeah, but that ain't the one.
And it's growing right there in your yard.
Yeah, you see, I got a little confused. And
oh,
I thought
Mr. McGee, you're wonderful.
Huh? I am?
Mm-hmm. You're the nicest man in town, I bet you. Huh? You put your Christmas tree right out in the front yard where everybody can share it with you, didn't you?
Well, I didn't exactly.
See, all the kids in the neighborhood are going to love you for this, mister. Why, I can hardly wait till you get it all lighted up.
You can't, eh?
Hmm?
I says you can't, eh?
Can't what?
You can't wait till I get it all lighted up.
Gee, neither can I. And you know what, mister?
What?
When it's growing in the ground like that, it can't wobble and fall over either. Our Christmas tree at home is always wobbly.
Yeah, lots of people make that mistake, sis. They don't stop to think if they were a tree and got all lit up and then came into a warm room, they'd wobble a little. Skip it. So you think it looks all right out here in the front yard?
Oh, boy. I'll say. Mm-hmm. Now all the little children that haven't got Christmas trees can come and see yours, can't they?
Yeah, I kind of plan to get a lot of little bags of candy and stuff and let the kids help themselves Christmas Eve, sis. I just planned that. Think they'd like that?
Gee, will they ever? And us kids will sing.
Sing what?
You know, the song we sing for you every Christmas time. 'Twas the night before Christmas, the one we just recorded.
Oh.
Would you like to hear it now, mister? Would you, huh?
Yes. Yes, I believe I would, sis.
Okay. Hey, Kenny, Johnny, Buddy, Randy, come here. He wants to hear it, all right.
Wonderful bunch of kids going around the neighborhood with a 30-piece orchestra.
Was the night before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hope that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
The children were nestled all warm in their wee little beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their wee little beds. Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a chuckle and a smile. I knew all the while I had nothing to dread.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings.
Oh, boy.
Then turned with a jerk and laying a
big on the side of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the dog of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, and he drove on a car.
Merry Christmas to all.
Broadcasting Company. The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. That our broadcast brings us into your home right on Christmas. All of us on the show and the makers of Johnson's Wax products consider it a privilege and an honor to be included in your family circle tonight and to have an opportunity to say Merry Christmas. Those of you who've made a vow to do your shopping earlier next Christmas, we'd like to suggest that there are only 365 days left.
And if you hurry, maybe you can get one of those unique and handsome articles, like the one just presented to and now being admired by Fibber McGee and Molly.
Imagine old Doc Gamble giving us one of these, Molly. Isn't that the most beautiful present you ever saw?
It certainly is.
Gosh.
I haven't seen so much chromium since that was what the Silver Service Aunt Sarah sent us in 1937 turned out to be.
And look how solid it's built.
Yes.
There's real construction in this.
Certainly is well made.
You don't pick these things up in bargain basements, kiddo. There was a lot of thought went into buying a thing like this.
I'll bet there was.
Yes, sir.
What is it?
What do you mean, what is it?
I mean, what is it?
Why, it's one of those things that... Why, you use it to... Well, they sort of... I don't know what it is.
Well, weren't there any directions or instructions or anything in the package it came in?
Nope. Came all wrapped up in red tissue paper. Yards and yards of it. My eyes are still a little bloodshot from unwrapping it.
By the way, what did you send Dr. Gamble this year? A book, wasn't it?
Yeah, a book. What to do till the doctor comes. This thing. I'll be doggone if I know whether to listen to this or cook with it. I don't know whether to tune it in, turn it on, or toss it out.
Well, we just have to ask Dr. Gamble what it is, Mom.
Oh, no. We can't do that. That wouldn't be polite.
And when did you start being polite to Dr. Gamble?
Oh,
you're usually at each other's throats like a couple of necktie salesmen.
Yeah, but my gosh, Molly, when a guy gives you a beautiful gift like this, you hate to admit you haven't got the brains to know what it's for.
Well, I don't hate to admit it. I don't know what it's for.
Well, me either, but I ain't going to give that old sulfur huckster the satisfaction of knowing it. Maybe somebody else will tip us off.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Mr. McGee, Merry Christmas.
Same to you, Alice, and thank you for the handkerchief.
You're welcome, Mrs. McGee, and thank you for the handkerchief.
Not at all, dear.
Well, if you kids are through batting them hankies around, I'd like to ask Alice a question.
Why, certainly, Mr. McGee. And if you're going to ask me what I think you're going to ask, The reason Harold and I stood on the porch so long last night when he brought me home was on account of I couldn't find my front door key.
Why, we never locked the front door, Alice. You knew that.
Yes, I knew that, but Harold didn't.
Who's Harold, Alice?
Oh, Harold is a fat old lady who is a buyer for the corset department at the Bon Ton's nephew. She's nice, though.
Who is?
Harold's aunt.
Oh.
She's a corset department buyer and also substitutes for the manager of household goods when she takes a day off in the basement just to the left of the elevators.
Oh, down there. Look, we got a door slam coming up here any minute, Alice. So let's get down to business. You see this thing that Doc Gamble gave us for Christmas?
Creepers, isn't that beautiful? May I use it sometime?
Oh, you certainly may, Alice. Anytime, and we'll watch it.
How do you use it, Alice? I mean, I just wondered if you use it the same way we do.
Oh, I probably do, Mr. McGee. How do you use it?
Now, he asked you first, dear.
Yeah, I just wanted to be sure you knew how to operate it, Alice. I wouldn't want you to get hurt, you know.
Get hurt with one of these things? Oh, Mr. McGee, you say the funniest things. Well, I've got to go now. I have several more presents to take around.
Where are they, Alice? Did you leave them upstairs?
No, I left them right here in the hall.
No, Alice, please.
Not on Christmas night, Alice.
Right here in the hall table drawer.
I thought for a minute there she was going...
It's a present for Ozzy I put in the hall closet.
Orchestra and symphony.
McGee.
Huh?
Will you please stop worrying about that gift from Dr. Gamble? You've sat in that chair for 2 hours just staring at it.
Well, I'm going to sit here till I figure out what it's for, too. Any hunk of chromium-plated aluminum going to make a monkey out of me. I'll figure it out if I... Hey, I'll bet it's a gopher trap.
Why should Dr. Gamble give you a gopher trap? There are no gophers in this part of the country.
Well, what's that got to do with it? He gave me Paris garters last year, and we're 4,000 miles from France.
Well, you've been through France. You've never been through a gopher hole.
Look, let's analyze this thing. Now, here's a handle here on top, see?
How do you know it's a handle?
Well, it stands to reason. It's kind of a loop that just fits the hand.
Well, I've got a gadget out in the kitchen with four of those loops on it, and it's an egg beater.
Okay, but let's just say it's a handle, just for the sake of argument.
All right, it's a handle.
Fine. Now we're getting someplace. All right, just below the handle here, there's a circular disc. That's obviously to protect the hand against something.
Such as what?
Such as I don't know what. Yes. Then we got two long, sharp prongs sticking out below it, like daggers. Now then, all we got to do is figure out what a thing like that is for.
Well, we've certainly made tremendous strides, haven't we? You knew that the minute you opened it up.
Now, let me see. If I hold it like this and somebody jogged my arm, I'd have two holes in my leg. Can't be right.
Isn't there anything movable on it, dearie? No working parts?
I haven't been able to find any. However, a few minutes ago, I was turning it this way and that, and all of a sudden, a sharp pain went through me. Kind of a stabbing sensation.
Like electricity or something?
No, like you'd left your manicure scissors here in this chair, and I'd sat on them, which you had, and I did.
Well, you were using them last, dearie, cutting stamps off the Christmas cards.
Yeah, well, I wanted them for my stamp collection. Got two from Indiana and one from Florida. Found another good one from Oklahoma, but I had to throw it away on account of I couldn't tell whether it was north or south. Hey, if that's Doc Gamble, stall him a minute. If I can figure out what this gadget is for, I won't have to be humiliated by asking him
It's just Mrs. Carstairs, McGee.
Oh, that old tomato surprise. Miss East St. Louis of 1904. She's had her face lifted so many times, she has to walk on her toes.
Yeah, but my goodness, she's... Come in.
Our old man Carstairs was nearsighted enough to... Merry Christmas, Carstairs.
And the same to you, Mr. McGee, and Mrs. McGee.
Thank you, Millicent. Move all those boxes and packages and things off the chair so Mrs. Carstairs can sit down, McGee.
Why, Sean?
Well, Kris Kringle seems to have done very well by you, my dear.
Ah, he did indeed, Mrs. Carstairs. The only thing I wanted that I didn't get was a new waffle iron. Kris crossed me on that.
I done all right, though, Carsty. What do you think of this thing that Doc Gamble gave me?
Yes. I gave my husband one of those for his birthday.
Oh.
They make a splendid gift, for men.
Now, what did he do with it, Mrs. Carstairs?
Oh, he still has it, my dear.
Yeah, but what was it for?
For his birthday.
But what is it good for?
Well, I only know what the salesman told me, my dear. And he said it was good for years and years. By the way, Mrs. McGee, thank you so much for the lovely handkerchief.
I'm so glad you like them, Millicent. And thank you for the lovely handkerchief. They're so beautiful. I've been sitting around in drafts trying to catch cold.
Look, Carsty, getting back to this gadget here, just exactly...
Oh, I almost forgot. Let me show you what my husband gave me for Christmas. Here. Isn't it beautiful?
Ah, oh, for goodness sake. A cornet.
No, my dear. A trumpet. Something I've always wanted.
You mean you can play one of them things, Carsty?
Oh, yes, a little, Mr. McGee.
Well.
Confidentially, I played truant from Wellesley one year and went on the road as trumpet player for Bumpsy Van Jive's original Barrel House Dance Bandits. Oh, such fun, really. And you know what?
No, what, Millicent?
On May 12th, I've been invited to play as guest trumpeter at the Wistful Vista Racetrack.
No kidding. Let's hear you play Boots and Saddles, Carsty.
Oh, certainly.
Thank you.
old Millicent.
Yeah, you better go easy on that hot finish, though, Carsey. You'll have Busher and Whirlaway coming around the clubhouse turn doing the Lindy Hop.
Oh, I shall have to brush up a bit, of course. I've almost lost my embouchure.
What on earth is an embouchure?
Well, that, my dear, is a French term, meaning an osculation in brass. Well, I must be going.
Wait a minute, Carsey. About this gadget here, what's it for and how do you use it?
Well, that depends, Mr. McGee. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Oh, he's right-handed.
Oh, then of course you use it in your left hand, Mr. McGee, thus leaving the right hand free to work with. Well, Merry Christmas to both of you.
I know this thing is to be used in the left hand. That's a big help.
Can you imagine her playing the trumpet, McGee? And very well, too, I thought.
Yeah, I can hardly wait for her guest shot at the racetrack. That'll be the first time anybody blew their brains out before a race. Hey, do you suppose this thing could be a potato slicer?
I do not. Huh? Anybody who approached a beautiful Idaho potato with a lethal weapon like that would get a nasty note from Governor Williams.
Oh.
Look.
Huh?
I have an idea. Let me see it a minute.
Okay, but be careful. Them tongs are sharp. Matter of fact, a gift like this ought to be labeled from Harry to Carrie. With love. Harry Carrie. Why do you want to look at it, Molly?
Look, now, all you have to do is write to the man who made this and ask him what it's for.
Hot dog, is his name on there?
It certainly is, stamped right into the metal.
What is it?
Half pending.
Oh, Molly, that's...
Merry Christmas, Molly. The same to you, Max.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junior. You're just the guy I wanted to see.
Yes, Mr. Wilcox. We received a simply wonderful gift.
Oh, you mean that electric iron I sent you? Glad you like it.
Yeah, but that isn't the thing
I thought it'd be a good gift for you, Molly, considering the time you spend pressing his nib's trousers here. He's the only guy I know who always looks like he'd been smuggling cantaloupes in his pant leg.
Ah, now, Mr. Wilcox.
Look, Junior, when you grow up, you'll realize that clothes ain't so awful important.
No. You ever try walking down 14th Street without any?
Well, he means that you can't judge a man by his clothes, Mr. Wilcox.
Certainly not. The seats of the mighty are often shiny, Junior. Mm. Remember that. Mm-hmm. It's better to have bags under the knees than under the eyes. There's many a dull character going around with sharp creases.
Yes, I know.
A wide lapel don't cover up a narrow mind, Junior. And a two-faced fella can look awful good in a single-breasted coat.
Yeah.
A loud check don't make much noise in the First National Bank, too,
well,
either.
So what?
And the horsehair out of some people's shoulder pads would look a lot better on the original horse's neck. You got any more sartorical comments to make?
No, Dad, I'm through.
Well, good. Now maybe we can get down to business. Show Mr. Wilcox what you got for Christmas, dearie.
Here, Junior, this thing. Ever see one of these before?
Seen them? Why, I used to manufacture them.
Huh?
Sure. My brother, Big Sedgwick Wilcox, and I had a little factory together.
Oh, heavenly days. Our troubles are over.
Hot dog. Used to build these things, eh, Junior? Well, sit down, boy. Pass him the cigars, Molly. Have a panatella, fella.
I don't use them, thanks.
Oh.
Of course, when I was manufacturing these gadgets, it was before I ever heard of Johnson's self-polishing blow coat.
Oh, of course, but when you made these things...
Which reminds me, folks, I have a little message from the Johnson Wax people.
Well, are we supposed to fall on the floor with loud shouts of amazement, Waxy? You got more messages in your system than Western Union. Only every tenth word is Johnson instead of love.
Now, don't let him stop you, Mr. Wilcox. Go right ahead.
Okay. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, same to you, son. Go ahead with the message.
That was it. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from the Johnson Wax people in Racine, Wisconsin and Brantford, Ontario. Now then, what were you saying about this Christmas present?
Well, he wants to know what it's for, and so do I.
I'm sorry, Molly. I promised Doc Gamble I wouldn't tell. He said he was giving you this and for me not to spoil the surprise. Well, jingle bells, kids.
Jingle bells, kids. Why, of all the dirty low-down tricks, he knew and he wouldn't tell.
Maybe it's a puzzle of some kind, McGee.
You can say that again. Hey, do you suppose this thing is a practical joke? Do you think it's liable to explode or squirt water out or something?
No, I don't. Dr. Gamble doesn't like practical jokes. You know, he told me once that anybody who would give anybody a loaded cigar ought to be made to eat six of them and then have his appendix removed with a blowtorch.
Ah, that sounds just like our kindly old family physician. Halfway up in the next block. That cowtown Kildare thinks the human frame is merely something for him and his buddies to play mumbly peg on. He snoops around among the various organs like a prospect in a Wurlitzer sales room. Besides which, if I...
Come in. Well, for goodness sakes, Merry Christmas, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Molly, and same to you. Merry Christmas, McGee.
Well, likewise, Latrivia. Hey, I got a kind of a problem on my hands, Latrivia.
Well, glad to help you, McGee. What seems to be your trouble?
It's this thing I got for Christmas, Latriv. Look.
What's it for?
What's it for, he says.
That's all, brother. Class dismissed. Well, did you have a nice Christmas, Latrivia?
Splendid, thank you. And you?
Just lovely, Your Honor. I gave himself here a nice leather tackle box, and he bought me a new hat.
He bought you a new hat?
You betcha, and a beauty, too, Latrivia, if I do say so myself as I shouldn't. It's right there on the floor, right in front of you there in that box.
Say, that is a beautiful hat.
Hey, hey, don't step on it, Latrivia.
I won't, don't worry. I usually keep an eagle eye about me.
Do you really, Mr. Mayor? That's interesting.
I always carry an elk's tooth myself. But every guy to his own good luck piece, I always say.
You misunderstood me, McGee. When I said I usually keep an eagle's eye about
me,
I...
How do you carry it, Latrivia? On a chain?
Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. I just...
Oh, it's in a ring. Take your gloves off and let's see it, Mr. Mayor. I've never seen an eagle's eye ring.
I do not have an evil eye. I mean eagle's eye. It isn't a case of any...
Oh, what do we care if it ain't a real eagle's eye, Latrivia? You mustn't be ashamed of a little thing like that.
I am not ashamed of it. There's nothing to be ashamed of. I don't own one.
Oh, it's one you borrowed. Something borrowed, something blue. A good luck piece will keep you true.
Will you both stop this nonsense? Good heavens, I didn't intend
to... It may be nonsense to you, Latrivia, but to thousands of people, a good luck charm means something. Maybe it's an elk's tooth, maybe an old coin, maybe an eagle's eye, but a charm...
I tell you, I have no charm.
Don't be so modest, Your Honor. Why, you have lots of charm.
Sure you have, boy. Don't lose confidence in yourself. Just look people in the eye.
I don't want to look eagles in the eye. People in the charm. I mean to say, if I's an eagle, an eagle's eye is... I merely tried to say that I had an owl's ring. An elf's coin. Two. And you mistook. You mistook. You understand? It's always a very... Every time I open my mouth, you just... I was thinking. You. McGee.
Yes?
May I say one thing before I leave?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor.
What is it, Latrivia, old man?
Simply this, McGee. You have your foot in Molly's hat. Good day.
Huh? Oh!
King's Man with Jingle Bells.
You have probably heard this song 100 times today, but this is how we warble it down Whistle Vista way. A day or two ago, when all the ground was white, I thought I'd take a ride with pretty Fanny Bright. I got my bobtail nag, 240 for his speed. I hitched him to an open sleigh and crack, I took the lead. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle, 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 jingle.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits light.
Oh, what fun to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
The hour was getting
late, so we started back right then. Her pawn be waiting at the gate if we weren't home by 10. The horse was lean and lank. Misfortune seemed his lot. He fell into a drifted bank and we got upside. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. All the fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
I see now. It couldn't be a bootjack. Stab yourself in the ankle every time you use it. How about a can opener? Oh, no, it's too simple, Mick. Oh, I got it. Hey, Molly.
Yes, dearie?
You know what this is? It's a potato masher. Am I dumb not to have thought of that before?
If that was a masher, dearie, and I was a potato, I'd certainly slap his face.
You don't think it's a potato masher?
To give you a short answer, no.
Oh.
Those two sharp prongs would stab holes in a saucepan and nothing flat.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Well, I wish I could get the answer. As the phonograph needle said to the turntable, this thing is driving me into an early groove.
Well, I can see just one way out, dearie. Call Dr. Gamble and tell him frankly that you don't know what his gift is for.
Oh, I'd hate to do that. He'd have the laugh on me the rest of my life. Suppose it turned out to be a necktie rack or something simple like that. Wouldn't I look dopey?
Well, my goodness, you can't sit in that chair the rest of your days glaring at it. Why don't you do something?
Come in.
Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble. Merry Christmas.
Same to you, my dear. And even to you, Marblehead.
Thank you, Aerosmith. It's always nice to see you in our little home.
Thank you.
Because while you're in our little home, we know you're not torturing some helpless patient.
Stop it now, McGee. Why don't you two boys ever say anything nice about each other?
That's a good idea, Molly. You first, McGee. Say something nice about me.
My gosh, I can't think of anything.
Neither can I. Oh, well. Have a nice Christmas, folks.
Oh, just grand, Doctor. We got so many nice things.
And some interesting things, too, Doc.
Yes?
Some of our friends really use their ingenuity. Now, you take... I'll get it.
79 Wistful Vista, Molly McGee speaking. Who? Yes, he's right here. For you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Just tell him to put a mustard plaster on it, and if the veins start coming too close together, they're smoking too much.
I see.
Hello. Hello, Gamble speaking. Who? Oh, yes, Mrs. Harlan. He won't. Well, tie his legs together and try again. I'll be there as soon as I can. Goodbye.
Nurse?
Housekeeper. Can't get our turkey in the oven.
Talking about?
We were talking about the interesting things people send people for Christmas.
Such as what, McGee?
Well, now, for instance, that wonderful gift you sent McGee, Doctor.
This, Doc.
Oh, yes. You like it?
Oh, do we like it? We love it, Doctor. McGee just tickled to death with it.
Don't know how I ever got along without one, Doc.
Well, that's great, my boy.
Yeah?
You had me sort of stymied there for a while, and then I thought of this. I said to myself, aha, I said, that's just the thing for McGee.
The thing I like about it is there's no complicated machinery to it.
No, it's extremely simple.
It sure is. You
know?
Was there any directions come with it, Doc?
Directions? For a simple little thing like that?
Don't be silly, dear. You certainly don't need instructions for a gadget like that. Why, there isn't a moving part on it.
I was just kidding. My gosh, a child could manage this.
I certainly.
I don't know where I could borrow a child. Hey, Doc.
Yeah?
I just wondered if, well, when you use this, it's...
What he means, Doctor, is this. You know, he thinks so much of your gift, he doesn't want to damage it by using it wrong. How do you use it?
Well, great Scott, how does anybody use it?
Well, that's a good question.
Ah, for the... I give up. Look, Doc,
yes.
While I really appreciate this gift...
And we've always wanted one.
There's one little thing I want to know.
What's that, my boy?
What in Sam Hill is it for?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Well, then why did you give it to me?
Because you gave it to me last Christmas, Pickleton.
Want to solve the mystery of that gadget, why don't you call the people you bought it from?
They wouldn't know.
Why wouldn't they?
I just happened to think. I won that thing on a punch board. It cost me 70 cents.
Oh, dear. Well, let's forget the whole thing. What do you say?
I say this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very, very special Christmas. The first peacetime Christmas in 5 years. For millions of war victims all over the world, it isn't a very merry one. Which makes us doubly appreciative of our own blessings.
Among which we count the friendship of all of you who have been so loyal to us these many years.
Merry Christmas to you.
And good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Products for Home and Industry and inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
Time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
It's a gay family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, transcribed and brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts.
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. The open pudding. Yes, sorry.
And now Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. As we look in on the Coopers this evening, George is sitting in the living room reading the paper when Liz makes a dramatic announcement.
Okay, George, this is it.
Huh? What?
Now, don't try to get out of it. I know when I tell you, you'll say, oh, no.
What are you talking about?
This is the night we have to pick out our Christmas card.
Oh, no.
Well, I called it.
Oh, but Liz, we just picked out the Christmas cards the other day.
That was last year.
Well, do we have to do it tonight?
Yes, and you don't even have to get out of your chair.
I don't?
No. Luckily, one of the women in the neighborhood is selling Christmas cards to make extra money, and I have her sample book right here.
Well, this is something like it. Now, who was smart enough to think of doing that?
If she was a snake, I'd bite you.
Oh. Liz, you selling Christmas cards?
Good morning, sir. I represent the Kris Kringle Christmas Card Company. I have a lovely selection of cards, 25 for a dollar with your name printed free.
Honey, I'm proud of it. Give me a kiss.
Give me an order.
Oh, strictly business, huh?
Right.
How many orders have you sold?
Oh, quite a few.
How many?
It's going along fine.
How many?
Yours and two more will make three.
I see.
Well, I just started, George. Now take a look at these cards. Every one of them distinctive and completely unusual. Here, look at number 14. The verse inside, very clever.
Oh.
Just listen to this. This is the season of holly and spruce, so Merry Christmas to you, Uncle Bruce.
Uncle Bruce. That seems to have a very limited appeal. Holly and spruce. Uncle Bruce.
Not at all.
Oh, Liz, be sensible. What if his name isn't Uncle Bruce?
Very simple. Buy card number 14A. Here it is. This is the season of spruce and holly, so Merry Christmas to you, Uncle Chuck.
I was afraid of that. Well, my only uncle's name is Gil Hooley.
That's number 14G.
What?
This is the season that we know as Yuli, so Merry Christmas to you, Uncle Gil.
Now,
Hooley.
Cut that out. You made that up.
All right, I did. But you aren't giving these cards a fair chance. Look, now here's a nice one.
Yeah, not bad. Okay, we'll take that.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, George. It's the only nice one in the book. I'll write up the order. How many do you want of those, sir?
Oh, 100, I guess.
100 of number 20. That'll be $4, please.
$4 is the regular retail price.
I know.
Well, don't you get a discount when you buy them yourself?
I'm not buying them. You are.
But I was under the impression that the name on the cards would be George and Liz.
Well, whatever you've got the cards, sir, the printing is free.
Oh, Liz. This doesn't make sense. You're making a commission on yourself. You're taking the money out of one pocket and putting it in the other.
Well, as long as the first pocket is yours and the second pocket is mine, who cares?
You insist on my paying the full price?
Yes, sir.
All right. Here's your $4.
Thank you. That was easier than I expected.
Now about the printing on my cards.
Yes, sir. How would you like that to read? Liz and George Cooper?
No.
George and Liz Cooper?
No.
Well, how do you want it to read?
George Cooper and Fred.
Fred! What will people think?
I don't know. How soon may I expect those, miss?
George!
What?
I don't want to be your friend. I want to be your wife.
I can't hear you.
Well, I'll tell you what. Since you're such a close relative, I'll forget my commission.
Ah, good.
Darn you. I still haven't made any money. Who else can I sell some cards to? Mrs. Cooper! Oh, I hear my pigeon cooing at me. In here, Katie!
Could I see, Miss?
Yes, of course. Come in. Sit down, Katie. Make yourself at home.
Well,
I wanted to see you, too.
Well, you see, I represent the Kris Kringle Christmas Card Company.
Is there an echo in here?
Oh, Miss Cooper, you too.
I'm afraid so, Katie.
How's this with you?
Oh, I've sold every customer I've talked to.
Really? The only customer I sold is myself.
Which did you pick, Katie?
Number 20.
That's the one we picked.
Why don't we buy just one set of cards and sign a George, Liz, and Katie?
That'll do, George.
Okay.
Well, I'll be getting along. I have a list of prospects. I'll see you there.
Goodbye, Katie.
Good luck.
I wonder if any of my prospects are on her list. Oh, my goodness, where's that phone?
What's the matter?
Iris Atterbury. Katie's headed for there right now. Ooh, I'm glad I thought of it in time. Iris should be good for at least a... Hello, Iris? Well, Merry Christmas to you. Iris, what I called about. Oh, you were getting ready to call me? No, I just bought my card. I've heard of the Kris Kringle Christmas that you buy. Oh, number 20. What did I want? Well, I just called up to say Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Goodbye.
Did she take number 20?
Yes. If this keeps up, everybody in town can buy one card and keep it.
Well, let's pick another card.
Oh, it's no use, George. That was the only good one in the book. The way I feel right now, I don't think I'll even send that card this year.
No, you don't mean that.
I do, too. It's just not worth it. Look what happened last year.
Don't remind me.
Knocked ourselves out getting the cleverest, cutest card in town. Sent out 3 boxes of them, and not a single soul so much as said, we got your card.
Well, the important thing is that we sent them.
Who's that?
No, probably someone from the Kris Kringle Christmas Card Company. I'll get it.
Special delivery.
Thank you. It's a special delivery letter, Liz.
For me?
It's from my
for me.
It's for both of us.
Oh, sure.
I don't know what you have against Mother.
There. Look at the first line of that letter and you'll see. My dear, darling, adorable, wonderful George. And Liz.
Now,
Liz. Well, that's nice. Read it for yourself, George.
My dear, darling, adorable, wonderful George and Liz.
Well, he sure changed her tune in a hurry.
I can't be with you this Christmas, but I'd like to have a picture with a picture of your smiling face. Your two smiling faces.
Yes, your two and my face. Look, you're not fooling me, George. What else does she say?
Love, Mother. Nothing else, Liz.
Let me see that letter.
Oh, no, there's nothing.
Let me see. Well, if it will keep peace in your family, you may tell Liz I asked for a picture of you both together. But, baby, try to stand a little away from her so I can cut your picture out clean.
Now, Liz.
This is no news to me, George. I've seen the only picture she has of us. The one of you with my arm around you. Just my arm. She cut the rest of me out.
Well, honey, she's getting old. Now, let's just forget about my mother. We still haven't settled the matter of our Christmas cards. Let's see the rest of the cards in that book.
No, the rest of them are just awful. I could make better cards than... Hey, that's an idea. I'll make our Christmas cards myself.
Oh, you're artistic. You better buy them.
Either I make them myself or you buy them.
Oh, all right. Make them, but you'll be sorry.
Okay, George Cooper, just wait till you see the beautiful cards I make. You'll see how artistic I am.
Well, folks, for a picture that's always a triumphant success, you just can't beat a beautiful, shimmering mold of Jell-O. So pretty to look at and so easy to make, the swell new quick-setting will hit. It's a busy day lifesaver. Gives you beautiful finished Jell-O in just about one. Dissolve your Jell-O in one cup of hot water. Then add one cup of ice cubes or crushed ice, filling the cup to the brim with water. Stir until the ice melts completely and pop into the refrigerator to chill. And about 1 hour later, your Jell-O is all ready to set on the table. All six delicious Jell-O flavors go with the holidays like Santa's sleigh. So sparkling gay in those bright, shimmering colors. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. And also fruit-rich good to eat. They make a party of any meal. Look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O. And it's Jell-O for red letter desserts.
J-E-L-L-O.
And now back to Lucille Ball and My Favorite Husband. As we look in on the Coopers once again, it is 2 days later. 2 days that Liz has spent diligently carving a linoleum block to hand print their Christmas cards.
Okay, stand by, Katie. You are about to witness the first printing of an original Liz Cooper Christmas card. I'll bet it's adorable. Now I spread the ink on, push it onto the paper like this. There. Ah. Well, what do you think of it? Well, it's nice, but, what does it say? Merry Christmas. In what language? Doesn't look like that to me. Look what I carved. And did you make the letters backwards? Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. Mrs. Cooper, when you're making a block to print with, you have to make the letters backwards if you want them to come out forwards. If you make them frontwards, they'll fit backwards.
Now she tells me.
The design is nice. Maybe you can send them anyway.
No, I'm afraid our friends wouldn't understand it was Merry Christmas if it says Sam Tritch E-Rim.
I guess not.
And they wouldn't even know who it was from. Look at our name, Zill and Egg Rog. The Egg Rog Repook. I'm right back where I started from.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll get it, Katie. Yes?
Oh, good afternoon, madam.
If I told you I could solve all your Christmas card problems, what would you say?
I love you.
You do?
No, I meant you came along at the right moment. I'm desperate.
You must be if you love me.
Look, shall we stick to Christmas cards? Now, what are you selling?
This year, the Smart City is sending personalized cards. Why don't you send your friend you?
Me?
Yes, you.
Well, I'll tell you, I tried it, but I don't sit through that slot in the mailbox.
I was referring to a likeness of yourself. A Christmas card with a picture of you on it.
Oh!
The Pavlovsky Studio of Photographic Art has a holiday offer. 100 cards with your picture, complete with envelopes, for the ridiculously low price of $5.
Oh, what a wonderful idea. Our picture on a Christmas card. I'll take it.
I haven't finished yet.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
And 47 cents. I'm finished.
Well, when can we have the steak?
I just came up to you this afternoon, and you know you'll be having your picture taken by a master, one of the truly great photographers of our time, Professor K. Pavlovsky himself.
Wonderful. Oh, I'm so relieved. My problems are all solved. I'm so happy I could kiss.
You don't really mean that, do you?
No, I just said it.
Yes. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Did you hear that, Katie?
Yes, ma'am.
I solved all my troubles in one fell swoop.
Did you?
What do you mean?
This means your mother-in-law will get a picture.
Oh, my goodness, you're right. I can't take those cards. Hey, I made a mistake. Oh, he's gone.
Now, what are you going to do?
There's only one thing to do. I've got to stick so close to George in those pictures that she can't cut me out. Well, let's see now. Here it is. Pavlovsky Photographic Studio.
Looks like sort of a beat-up joint.
There doesn't seem to be anyone here. Oh, there's a salesman. Hello there.
Hello, 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 Mrs. Cooper.
Is Professor Pavlovsky ready to take our picture?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are Sergei Pavlovsky?
Well, now, if you'll step into my studio.
How do you want us to pose?
Well, I thought and I thought and I thought and I thought and I think I've come up with something unusual for you.
Oh, good. What is it?
Mr. Cooper, I thought you could be sitting in the chair holding a derby hat over your chest and Mrs. Cooper could be standing in back of you with her hand on your shoulder.
Oh, that would be nice. But don't you think I should wear a handlebar mustache? And where are the head clamps?
Right behind you.
No, I didn't see them.
Look, if you two comics don't mind, how about a nice informal pose?
All right, I'll sit on your lap.
On my lap?
Well, that's informal. I want to be close to you, George. So close that even a scissors won't fit between us.
Now, don't be so...
Well, you get posed and I'll focus the camera.
Ooh, what's the matter?
I've forgotten how dark it was under here.
Oh, well, how do we look?
Oh, you look fine. And Mr. Cooper... where are you, Mr. Cooper? I know you're there. I can see your shoes.
Oh, Liz, for heaven's sake, you're right in front of me. Now, don't hog the picture. Now, sit here by my side.
Okay.
Not so close. There's plenty of room. We'll both be in the picture.
Yeah, but not for long.
Now, you sit right there.
Heads together.
Heads apart.
Heads together.
Heads apart.
All right.
There. All right, go ahead, Professor. Take the picture.
All right. One, two. Mr. Cooper.
Yes?
Do you want with a hand growing out of the top of your head?
Oh, Liz, cut that out.
Heads together?
All right, heads together.
Now, hold that. Ooh, what happened?
You used too much flashlight powder.
Liz, honey, I'm home.
Hi, George. How's my little hub?
Oh, Okay, I stopped by the photographer's on the way home and got the proof.
Oh, good. Give me a kiss.
Proof! That's a great way to lose a lip.
Hey, where are they?
Take it easy. Don't worry. They're all pretty good.
Oh, you pee.
I just put them in the shop.
You might at least have waited until we looked at them together.
Well, which one do you like?
Well, I think this one is the best, George. There's a nice highlight on my hair.
Yeah, but...
But what?
Well, it makes me look like I need a shave.
Oh, I hadn't noticed you. Well, which one do you like?
Well, I rather like this. I think that's the pick.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful of you, George. Wonderful.
Well, then we'll tell him
but,
to go ahead. But what?
That's my bad side.
Well, what about this next? It's a different pose.
Oh, no, that really is a side.
Well, you better settle on something, Liz. You're running out of sides.
Well, how about this one? No, I don't like it.
No, I don't either.
Too bad. It's the first one we've agreed on.
Look, Liz, you're a woman, and it matters more to you than to me. We'll pick one that flatters you.
Oh, well, thanks, dear, but most of them will go to your business acquaintances. It's more important that you look your best.
No, I insist. The best one of you.
I insist. Now, the best one of you.
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 Well, all right.
Darn it, I went one you too many. You big ham.
All right, Liz. Just so nobody will be unhappy, we'll pick this one.
Well, the one where we both look lousy? Doesn't even look like it.
Don't worry, dear. Our names will be on it.
Okay, maybe people will be nice like they were last year and not say anything about it. Oh, Professor Bagalowski.
Oh, Mrs. Cooper, I was just going to start on your card.
Oh, I'm glad I caught you. I got to thinking that the picture we decided on wasn't really flattering enough of George, so I want to change it and surprise it.
Well, all right. Here are the proofs. Which one is it you want now?
This one. This is the one that makes George look good.
It is? Well, this makes him look like he needs a shave.
Oh, I know that that's when George looks his best, in the morning before he shaves.
Well, all right, if that's what you want. Oh, one thing, if I may say so. You look gorgeous in this one.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
Oh. Well, I'll start in the right way.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Oh, Professor Pagalowski.
Oh, Mr. Cooper, I'm just going to start on your card.
Oh, I'm glad I caught you. You know, I got to thinking that the picture we decided on wasn't flattering enough of Liz.
Oh? Well, it will be when you see it on the card.
No, I want to chip in and surprise her.
Well, all right. Here are the proofs.
We want to, this one. Oh, Liz looks great in this one.
She does?
Yeah.
But that's one of her bad sides.
Oh, I know, but Liz's bad side is so much prettier than anyone else's good side.
Well, all right. And if I may say so, this one is certainly handsome of you.
You think so? Oh, gee, I hadn't noticed.
Yeah. Now, you sure this is the one you want?
Oh, yes, this is it, all right.
Well, it better be, because I'm starting on him right now.
Hey, I can hardly wait to see what they look like.
Oh, here, George, you open them. Oh, no, wait.
What's the matter?
George, before you open the card, there's something we should discuss.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what a big little person Professor is. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if he makes a lot of mistakes.
What about?
Well, if, for instance, he should have made a mistake and printed the wrong picture on our card. Now, understand, I'm pretty sure he didn't. But if he did... Now, there isn't any reason for either one of us to get upset, is there?
Well, certainly not.
If there is a mistake, we'll take it good-naturedly and all have a good laugh over it, won't we?
Sure.
Okay, open the card.
Well, there they are.
But that's the one that's good of you. I mean, that isn't the one we picked out.
You were right, Liz. He made a mistake.
I'll say he did.
Well, I guess we'll just have to send him anyway.
Like heck we will.
Well, now, wait a minute. We weren't going to get upset, remember?
Upset? Who's that? Just because that little jerk made a mistake is no reason we have to send the Lemmy card.
Remember, we were going to be good-natured about it.
I am good-natured.
We're going to laugh about it.
I'm like it.
Aren't you being a little childish?
No!
After all, it's only a Christmas card.
I don't care what it is. We're not going to send them. I'll show you what we're going to do with them. There.
Miss, you threw them in the fire.
You bet I did.
Well, you know what you can do now. You can march right down to the store and buy some more cards.
Tomorrow.
Tonight.
George, it's snowing outside.
That's tough luck. I'll get your coat and galoshes out of the closet.
If you loved me, you wouldn't treat me this way. Turning me out on a night like this.
Liz.
Give me my go.
Well, Liz, honey, you don't have to.
Why? What do you mean?
Well, I have 3 boxes of regular Christmas cards right there in the closet, all stamped and addressed.
You have?
Real cute ones with a reindeer and little ribbons on its horns.
That sounds like the ones we had last year.
Yeah. No wonder nobody acknowledged them. I just found out I forgot to mail them. Yes, Lucille, what happens this evening?
Tonight, Robert, we go to Egypt. I am a famous lady archaeologist, and you're interviewing me for the Scientific Gazette. Little old bones music, Wilbur.
Hello.
Hello there.
Are you the famous archaeologist, Professor Dorothea Theodora?
Well, all right. We won't get very far if I ain't.
I see. Well, I'm from the Scientific Gazette, and I'd like to interrogate you.
Oh! Well, I think you're pretty cute, too.
Look, you don't understand. I'd like to ask you a question.
Oh, well, shoot the query, dearie.
I understand that you are the ultimate authority in the interpretation of primitive inscriptions unearthed since the Neolithic, Paleolithic, and Pleistocene ages.
Well, we all have days like that.
You are the only living person who can read hieroglyphics.
I am? Oh, I am, yes.
Would you read those hieroglyphics there for me?
Oh, gladly. A square, curly Q, arrow, man, zigzag, zag zig, moon, tree, doodle.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I think it means Jell-O comes in 6 delicious flavors. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and doodle.
That's lime.
Oh, you can read Egyptian, too.
I can read Egyptian as well as you can. I suppose the next line says, the flavor is locked in by a special process and can't get out till your first detectable... A delectable spoonful.
Oh, you can't even read English.
Jell-O.
You may let me finish it for you. A Jell-O makes you think of the real ripe prune itself. And so look for the big red letters on the pyramid. Oh, and look, there's a signature.
3 drums.
Yes, you know who that is, don't you?
No.
No. 3 drums. Why, that's that famous Egyptian philosopher, the Sphinx.
You have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Knight, transcribed by Rick Griff with Matthew Hopkins. Original music was composed by Marlon Skiles and edited by Wilbur Hatch. The part of Katie the maid was played by Ruth Parrott.
Henry, what are you thinking about?
Why, that new instant Sanka coffee, dear. It certainly is wonderful.
Sure thing. Just look at the new richer coffee color. Taste the new full-body flavor. Discover how much less instant Sanka costs. And did you know, the makers of Instant Sanka make the only caffeine-free coffee? The kind that can't affect anybody's nerves or sleep. Try the new Instant Sanka. It's wonderful.
Be sure to listen to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband again next week, presented by...
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. Feel the pudding, yes, sirree.
The name Jell-O is a registered trademark of General Foods. Bob Lamont speaking.
This is CBS, where you hear Lucille Ball and My Favorite Husband every Saturday night on the Columbia Watch.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
It's the Gay Family Series, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Transcribed and brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts.
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. The pudding gets furry.
With Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. And look in on the Coopers tonight. Liz and George are entertaining George's boss, Mr. Atterbury, and his wife, Iris. Dinner is over, and the foursome is in the living room.
Another demi-tasse, Mr. Atterbury.
Please, Liz.
What happened to the demi-tasse Liz just poured for you? You didn't drink it.
No, it disappeared into that lump of sugar at the bottom of the cup.
Wait, I'll get you a man-sized cup, Mr. Atterbury.
No, never mind. This'll do.
Iris, what are you going to wear to the play at the women's club?
I may not go. I haven't a thing to wear.
I haven't a single thing to put on myself. I may not go either.
Well, you could always wrap a towel around you and make a run for it.
Rudolph, this is a big problem.
Oh, I know, dear. We have the same problem, don't we, boy?
Mercy, yes. What are you going to wear, Mr. Atterbury?
I may not even go.
Okay. You never seem to get tired of that stale routine. Just get it all out of your system in time for the play Saturday night.
Saturday night? Well, we can't go to any play Saturday night.
I should say not.
Why?
The Jolly Rovers are having their annual stag party Saturday night.
Well, can't they have it some other night?
I should say not. We always have our stag party the Saturday before Christmas.
Well, how can you set up a perfectly wonderful play put on by women's club for a lovely old stag party?
We don't.
Well, I think it's terrible having a big wild stag party just before Christmas.
It's not a big wild stag party. It's our yearly dinner where we give presents to all the newsboys in town.
We really do. We even have a Santa Claus who hands out the presents.
Santa Claus. Oh, they do, Iris. A cute little blonde Santa Claus who jumps out of a cake.
All right, Liz.
You see, it's a switch. The Jolly Rovers sit down and Santa Claus sits on their lap.
Untrue. We're having a real man, Santa Claus.
No.
Yes. The whole closet. He's picking it up tomorrow.
Well, if it's that kind of a party, why can't we go?
Yeah.
Well, it's a rule, that's all.
Rule, that's all.
No women allowed.
No women. Well, then who's going to jump out of the cake? A wire-haired fox terrier?
No one is jumping out of the cake. Oh, by the way, where's my Jolly Rover hat?
That stocking cap with a pom-pom on it? Oh, George, that hat makes you look like one of the seven dwarfs.
It's our official Jolly Rover hat. Now find it.
I hope you haven't mislaid my hat, Iris.
Don't worry, I know just where it is, Dopey.
Lotus bug.
Don't pay any attention to them, Mr. Atterbury. They're just soreheads because we won't let them come to the Jolly Rover stag.
Would you care to join me upstairs, Iris?
What for, girl?
We're going to design official hats for us jolly soreheads.
Oh, hi, Iris.
Liz, girl. I just stopped by on my way from the market.
Well, come on in. I just finished pressing George's Jolly Rover hat.
Ew. Every time I think of our husbands going to a stag party to ogle dancing girls, it makes my blood boil.
But, Iris, they said it was a party for the newsboys and there wouldn't be any girls there. You don't think they were lying, do you?
Yes,
so do I.
Let's face it, girl, they're going to have a big, wild spree. Now, what are we going to do about it?
What can we do? I know. Let's have our own stag party. Or rather, we'll have a dough party.
Yeah!
We'll invite all the girls, and we'll have a table with a big cake on it. And in the middle of the evening, the cake will burst open, and a man will jump out.
Okay! What else will we do?
Well, we'll sit around and smoke cigars and tell each other stories we've heard before.
I don't like that.
Nah, me either. Apparently a stag party isn't as much fun when a doe does it. Yeah, let's forget about it. Let them go to their old party. Gee, I'd like to fool them. Do you suppose there's any way we could sneak in? Nah. The only way would be to dress up in clothes. We never get away with that. Nah,
we never get away with that.
It's absolutely out of the question.
Yeah.
Which do you want to wear, George's gray pinstripe or his blue serge?
Oh, girl, do we dare?
Well, it's worth a try. Now, let's get dressed and see how we look.
Okay.
If we look like men, we might be going to our first stag party Saturday night. Well, Iris, how do I look in George's gray flannel suit?
Right out of Esquire. Oh, but look at your lumpy shoulders.
Hmm?
Did you hang her in your coat?
No, these are George's shoulders.
Well, doesn't he take them to work with him?
I'm afraid not. George stops at the lapels.
How disillusioning. Well, how does this coat look on me? It's too big, isn't it?
No. Here's your necktie.
Oh, thanks.
Well, take it.
Wait a minute. I know my hand's up this sleeve somewhere. There it is. Oh, hey, come here. There's something white on your trouser leg.
Oh, must be the lining. Rip it out, will you?
All right.
Oh, let go, Iris. You're choking me. That's my shirt tail. Do you think we could get by at a stag party with these clothes on?
Well, you could fool me. Well, you could fool me, too, but we better try it out on some impartial observers.
How? Well, we'll walk down the street and see if anyone notices. Ooh, wait a minute. We got to wear something on our head.
Oh, yes.
After all, how many men have hair the color of mine?
As a matter of fact, how many women have hair?
Just never mind. Anyway, we don't have to worry. We'll be wearing Jolly Party.
Oh, that's right.
Here, we'll just put on a couple of George's hats for now. Here's one for you. Come on, let's see if anyone spots it. Just walk along like we're two men.
Okay. Oh, I feel so silly. Say, here comes someone we don't know.
I'll ask him the time.
Good idea. Hey, bud.
Yeah?
You got the time?
Sure, it's 2:45.
Thanks a lot, Mac.
Perfectly welcome, madam.
Darn
how'd you know I was a woman?
Well, that's hard to say. It could be the way you walk. It might have been the lipstick you have on, but I... I think the real reason is that you were the first man I ever saw carrying a purse.
Come on, Iris, let's go home.
Good to be back in our own clothes again, isn't it?
I'll say. Feels wonderful to be able to straighten up.
What do you mean?
Well, George's socks hung down over my shoes, so I hooked them onto my girdle.
I thought you looked bent over.
I guess we're not going to make it to the Jolly Rover Stag.
Too bad. I'm dying to see what makes those tired old rovers so jolly. Must be some way, Iris. I'm not going to give up.
I am.
I wonder if we could both fit in the cake. Huh? I mean, as long as we can't pretend to be men, maybe we can pretend to be women.
What?
So you know what I mean. We could go as dancing girls.
Personally, I think we're better qualified to go as men.
Well, there must be some way to get in.
There's only one way left. We'll put icing on our heads and go as the cake.
Stop. You may have given up, Iris, but I haven't. I wonder who that can be.
Hello, Miss Cooper.
That's right.
Mr. Cooper sent me out to pick up my Santa Claus suit.
Oh, yes, he mentioned it. It's right here in the hall. Wait a minute. A Santa Claus suit?
Yeah, that's right.
With long whiskers and a white mustache?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, the party has been called.
Oh, are you sure?
Positive.
But they already paid me.
Oh, that's all right. You just keep the money.
Oh, gee, thanks. Merry,
Christmas.
Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Liz, what did you do that for? Now they won't have any Santa Claus at the stag.
Oh, yes, they will.
Well, how do you figure? Who will it be?
Ho, ho, ho. Sit on my lap and tell me what you want for Christmas, little girl. Ho, ho, ho.
You know, crashing a party can cause a lot of commotion sometimes. Haven't you had unexpected guests drop in and stay for dinner and you were at wit's end as to what to serve? Well, good news. You can whip out a grand and glorious Jell-O dessert in jig time now with this swell new quick-setting way to prepare it. Just dissolve your Jell-O in 1 cup of hot water. Then add 1 cup of ice cubes or crushed ice, filling the cup to the brim with water. Stir until ice melts completely and chill firm in the refrigerator. And in just about 1 short hour, you have a beautiful finished Jell-O dessert all ready to set on the table. It's a big boon for this busy holiday season. And all 6 delicious Jell-O flavors fit right into the holiday mood. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. Bursting with rich fruit-like flavor and sparkling with gay Christmas color. So look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O. And Jell-O stands for Red Letter Desserts.
J-E-L-L-O.
And now back to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband. As we look in on Cooper's again, Liz has just sent away the man who was to have played Santa Claus at the Jolly Rover's stag party by telling him the party was called off. Then she broke the news to Iris that she planned to sneak in as Santa herself.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas, all you jolly old rovers! Ho, ho, ho!
Oh, Liz, that's a wonderful idea. They'll never recognize you in a Santa Claus suit.
Of course not, and we'll be able to see the whole party.
Yeah, we'll be at the...
Wait a minute. What do you mean, we? Where am I, up on the roof holding the reindeer?
Oh, our God. Well, Iris, let's face it. We both can't go. They'd get suspicious if there were 2 Santa Clauses.
Well, okay, but why should you go? I'm shaped more like Santa Claus than you are. What am I saying?
Iris, the Santa Claus outfit is in my closet, and possession is 9 points of the suit.
You stinker. You got me on a technicality.
Good. Come on, help me get dressed. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Well, do you jolly rovers know any good stories?
Now, what's the matter with this car? Oh, no, I'm running out of gas. Oh, thank goodness I'm near a station.
Good evening.
5 gallons of gas, please.
Okay, and how about some hay for your reindeer?
What? Oh, I forgot I had on the Santa Claus suit.
Hey, wait a minute. Your voice sounds familiar. I know you're Mrs. Cooper.
That's right, and I'm in a big hurry, please.
Okay, 5 gallons of gas.
Yes, and charge it.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Cooper. No more credit until you pay me for the last fender I fixed.
But I can't pay you the fender yet. I haven't told George about it. I'm 4 fenders behind on my telling.
I'm sorry. No more credit.
But I have to have that gas.
Well, don't you have any money with you?
No, I left my wallet in my other pants, purse.
Well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, dear, what'll I do? Oh, wait a minute. Noah's department store is just across the street. They'll give me some money.
Okay, I'll have your sleigh all ready to go when you get back.
Santa Claus, I've been looking for you everywhere.
You certainly took a long enough dinner hour.
Oh, well, now, wait.
Never mind the alibis. Just get over to that toy department. There's a line of kids about long waiting for you.
Look, if you'll just let me explain, I'm not really Santa Claus.
Shh. You want the youngsters to hear you?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Hey, wait a minute. Your voice sounds funny. Have you been drinking?
Of course not. Look, I am not
Santa
Claus.
Stop saying that. Get into that toy department. And for heaven's sakes, in your condition, don't breathe on the children.
Listen, if you make me talk to all these children, you'll be sorry.
If you don't talk to them, you'll be sorry. Now, you get up in that chair and...
Hello, Sonny. Tell Santa Claus what you want.
Thanks, Santa Claus. Hello, little boy. Ho, ho, ho. What would you like for Christmas?
Well, I just told you yesterday. You got a lousy memory. I want an electric train. But they cost too much dough for my old man.
Not at all, Sonny. Not at all. Miller's department store is going to give every kid an electric train free. No kidding.
Santa, what are you saying?
Not only that, every child is going to get a free bicycle and a free wagon, a BB gun for boys, and a doll for the girls, and cakes and candy, all from Miller's free.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Santa, it's time for your dinner hour again.
And to the parents, Miller's is going to give a free washing machine and a new car and a free lawnmower.
Put your hand off my mouth. Who do you think you are, Santa Claus?
I told you you'd be sorry.
No, I told you you'd be sorry. You're fired.
You fire me, I don't work here.
And what are you doing here in the store?
I'm Mrs. George Cooper and I'm trying to cash a check.
Fat chance after all the trouble you've caused us.
Miller's is also giving free to every child in the world a complete playhouse.
All right.
A pony.
All right. Cash a check, anything. Only get out of our store. Oh, and one more thing.
What's that?
Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
All right, men. It's time to start the program for our annual Jolly Rovers Christmas party. Now, we've all had a... Now, we'll turn our attention to the fun part of the evening. George, has Santa Claus arrived yet?
Yes, he just got here.
Oh, good, good. I've just had word from my scouts at the North Pole that Santa Claus is just driving up in front of the building with his reindeer. And there he is, coming in the back of the hall now. Let's give him a big welcome.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas, everybody! Merry Christmas!
Hello, Santa Claus. Glad you finally got here. Have a chair.
I hope I haven't missed any of the, show.
No, no, we're just about ready to start.
Oh, good.
Originally, we were going to start our program with a dance.
Oh, let me get a seat down front.
But unfortunately, our dancer had a little accident.
What happened? She got her foot caught in the icing?
What?
Merry Christmas! Ho, ho, ho!
Well, like I was saying, our dancer Jim Andrews sprained his ankle and won't be able to do his tap dance tonight.
Tap dance? Jim?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry you didn't get to see him, Santa.
Yeah, too bad.
And now, man, I'm reminded of a little story.
Oh, here it comes. I'm ears. Give us a hot story.
Hot story?
Let me get over here close so I can hear better.
What's that?
Sam bought something.
I did? What is it?
It's a lipstick.
It is? I mean...
It is? Well, Oh, I know. Probably belongs to Rudolph, my red-lipped reindeer.
What?
Merry Christmas!
To get on with my story.
Yep, yep.
It all begins with a traveling salesman.
Go on.
This traveling salesman met a newsboy in our city of Sheridan Falls one night, and this newsboy lent him enough money for food and lodging. Years later, when the traveling salesman became successful, he organized the Jolly Rovers to help out newsboys everywhere, and that's why we are meeting here tonight.
Well, go on.
That's all.
That's all? You never got to the farmer's daughter.
There's no farmer's daughter in this story.
There isn't?
No, no. And now for your big moment, Santa. We're going to bring in the newsboys from the next room, and you'll hand out the presents.
What? I mean...
What? You really are giving presents to newsboys?
Yes, that's what you're here for.
Oh, no.
Santa, what's the matter? You look strange. Are you sick?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I'm sick. I better go lie down.
Oh, well, all right. Somebody take Santa to the men's locker room and...
Oh.
We'll give out the presents when he feels better.
Men's locker room.
You there. Come here. Here. Fella, help Santa down to the locker room, please.
Look, mister, I don't think I need to go to the men's locker room. I'm feeling a lot better now. You run along. Really, I can get there.
Wait a minute, mister. I can't go through that door. Might as well confess. I'm a woman. I've done a terrible thing. I came here dressed as Santa Claus to see what a stag party like. I didn't know they were really going to give presents to little newsboys. See, I couldn't face those kids. I'm so ashamed. Are you going to turn me in? Are you? Well, say something.
How do we get out of here, girl?
Iris?
Well, you're not the only one masquerading as a man.
Oh, love you. Come on, let's get out of here, boy.
Yes, Lucille, where do we go tonight?
Tonight, Robert, we go to darkest Africa. I am a British lady on a hunting expedition with my husband, and you are our number one boy. A little African music, please, Wilbur.
Sahib! Sahib! Quick! Wild rhinoceros is charging on camp!
Oh, I say, Chumley.
Yes, Penelope.
There's a worm I know charging on the camp.
Oh, what a crashing roar.
No, it's a trap.
Sahib, quick, get guns. Rhino is at gate.
I say Penelope.
Yes, Jumlin.
How about a spot of tea?
We're not having tea today, Jumlin.
No tea.
No tea.
Sahib, the rhino.
No tea.
That's right, old bean. We're having something much better.
Better than tea.
Robert. We're having jello.
Look, the rhino.
Jello. With the flavor that's locked in and can't get out till your first delectable spoonful.
Look, Sahib, the rhino coming toward us.
Yes, that's the one. Jello that comes in six delicious flavors. And all you do is look for the big red letters on the box.
The rhino!
Well, I say, old girl, if we have jello, what flavor shall I eat?
Well, strawberries, jolly.
Ooh, rather.
Quick, Sahib, your gun.
On the other hand, raspberry might be tasty. And then there's... Oh, by Jove, I forget the other flavors. You know what they are, Chumley.
Indubitably. Let's see. Strawberry.
Yes.
Raspberry.
Yes.
Cherry. Orange. Lemon. And,
The rhino tags Sahib in the underbrush!
Oh, what beastly luck. He hadn't given me the last flavor.
Lime!
Chumley, good show.
Sahib's gone.
I know. Whenever he talks about jello, he gets carried away.
Miss Sahib.
Well, chin up, pip, pip, cheerio. He's gone, but what a way to go, right between lemon and lime.
Have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Scott Rorick. Tonight's transcribed program was produced and directed by Jess Oppenheimer, who wrote the script with Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. Original music was composed by Marlon Skiles and conducted by Wilbur Hatch.
Henry, and on our honeymoon, too.
But gosh, honey, the new improved instant Sanka's really different.
Sure thing. Just look at the new richer coffee color. Taste the new full-bodied coffee flavor. Discover how much less instant Sanka costs. And did you know the makers of instant Sanka make the only caffeine-free coffee? The kind that can't affect anybody's nerves or sleep. Try the new instant Sanka. It's wonderful.
Be sure to listen to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband again next week, presented by...
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O cat. Milk the pudding jeffery.
The name Jell-O is a registered trademark of General Foods. Bob Lamond speaking.
Yes, where you hear My Favorite Husband every Saturday evening, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Colgate Palmolive Peat Company, makers of Luster Cream Shampoo and Colgate Dental Cream, bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. And we should like to open our show with greetings and best wishes from Colgate Palmolive Peat for a gloriously Merry Christmas. And now, our Miss Brooks. Yes, it's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, many of us are spending this Christmas Eve with our families and friends. But our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, isn't quite so fortunate.
No, my family was too far away to visit, and it seems my friends had other plans. But I made up my mind not to brood about it, and I was trimming a rather tiny tree in our living room when Mrs. Davis, my landlady, joined me.
That's quite a nice Christmas tree, Connie.
It isn't really a Christmas tree, Mrs. Davis. It's called a friendship tree. You see, I trim it by putting all my greeting cards on the branches with strips of cellophane tape. Looks nice, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You certainly received some pretty cards this year.
And the sentiments are so lovely. Look at this one I got from my principal.
Mr. Conklin, what does it say, dear?
It's very heartwarming, Mrs. Davis. It says, "To Miss Brooks, may the coming year bring you much more efficiency in your work." Signed, O. Conklin.
Oh, I can hardly believe it's Christmas time again. What happy memories I have of the earlier Christmases. There was one I'll never forget. I was just 8 years old, and when I tiptoed into the living room, there was my father standing by the tree. The minute he saw me, his eyes crinkled up, and he started to laugh so that his big white beard and its huge paunch just shook with glee.
Your father was made up as Santa Claus?
No, he always looked that way. But to get back to the present, Connie, I'd love to stay here and celebrate Christmas Eve with you, but I promised my sister Angela I'd come over to her place. You remember Angela, the absent-minded one?
Oh, certainly, Mrs. Davis.
She always got a big thrill out of the holidays, too, even when we were girls. Of course, the poor dear could never remember when it was actually Christmas. And one Christmas day, she did the funniest thing.
What was that, Mrs. Davis?
What's what, dear?
What did Angela do?
Angela?
Your sister.
My sister.
The absent-minded one. What did she do?
Well, I haven't spoken to Angela in some time. What has she been up to?
I wish I knew. Maybe I can refresh your memory. Christmas morning, Angela did the funniest thing.
Christmas morning isn't until tomorrow, Connie. You must be confused.
Well, don't worry about it. I only get these spells once in a while.
Well, you shouldn't let it go, Connie. If you don't mind my offering a little advice, I'd like to suggest that you train your mind to concentrate more.
I'll do it, Mrs. Davis.
Now then, I've developed a little scheme which works wonders for me. Supposing you have trouble remembering where you put things around the house. Well, you just keep repeating the location to yourself with a sort of rhythm. For example, I just chant to myself, "The mustard's in the closet, the bread is in the box. The mustard's in the closet, the bread is in the box." Now, isn't that simple? Mustard's in the closet, bread.
That's wonderful, Mrs. Davis. If anybody wants a mustard sandwich, you're really ready.
Yes. Now, before I do anything else, I want to invite you to join me tonight.
Join you?
Yes, dear. I'm going over
Angela's house.
Oh, yes, that's right. Oh, she's so cute with that little absent mind of hers. Why, sometimes she forgets what she was talking about right in the middle of a... Oh, dear me, I hope there's enough milk for the cat.
Well, I'm sure if we... But then maybe someday. Or if it doesn't seem to... And that's why I can't join you tonight. But thanks anyway, Mrs. Davis. I'll just spend a quiet evening at home here.
But how about Mr. Boynton? Don't tell me he was too shy to ask you for a date on Christmas Eve.
Why do you think there's mistletoe on all four walls? No, Mr. Boynton asked me all right, but then he canceled yesterday. Said he's going upstate to visit his folks for a couple of days. But don't worry about me, Mrs. Davis. I'll have a gay time. I'll listen to the radio, read, and from this window I can see our neighbor's television antenna.
But what about the little gifts you got for Walter Denton and Mr. and Mrs. Conklin and Harriet? When are you going to deliver them?
They told me not to bother. They said we'd exchange on the 26th.
The 26th? But I don't think the day after Christmas is the time to exchange gifts.
You don't? You should see the department stores. What's that, Mrs. Davis?
Oh, it's Minerva. Where are you, dear?
Oh, she's over by the tree. Here, Rover. I'm Minerva.
Isn't it the strangest thing how she bites at the pine needles? I guess the rosin in them appeals to her. I swear she likes the taste of it.
I guess to her, it's like a Tom and Jerry. Or rather, a Minnie and a Mickey. Come here, Minerva. We might as well get friendly. We're going to spend the evening together.
Well, I'll be running along now, dear. I hope you won't feel too lonely.
I'll be fine, Mrs. Davis. After all, I do have an imagination. I'll hang up my stocking in a little while. Then, when I'm pretending I'm asleep, I'll sneak in and fill it. Before you know it, it'll be midnight.
Midnight of Christmas Eve.
I can just picture it. A short, thin man in a black suit comes sliding down the chimney with an empty bag. St. Penniless, the schoolteacher, Santa Claus.
Well, at least you're not bitter. Now, Connie, about my sister...
Angela.
Thank you, dear. About my sister Angela.
Yes?
Good night, Dorothy.
Good night, Bernice. Oh, stop drinking those pine needles, Minerva. Come over here. That's a good kitty. Now, I'll just settle down in Mrs. Davis's rocker, and we'll have ourselves a nice, quiet rock. I've got to exercise more. My bones are rusting. Oh, it's the rocker. It's kind of soothing at that. You seem contented enough, Minerva. It was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Oops, sorry, Minerva. I didn't mean to upset you. Gosh, I'm sleepy. Now, who can that be? Expecting anyone, Minerva? That's funny. Nobody's here.
I'm here.
Where? Oh, leaning on my knee. What can I do for you?
I'm a salesman, but I don't believe in giving any sales talk or sob stories. All I do is tell you what I'm selling. If you want to buy, okay. If not, okay.
Okay? What are you selling?
Well, it's Christmas Eve. I'm just a small urchin, a little on the underprivileged side. I'm trying to make a few dollars to get some wood to heat our tiny apartment. So that while she's singing to my three sick sisters, my mother's lips don't turn blue.
That's what I like, no sob stories. If you're selling handkerchiefs, I'll take six.
No, ma'am, I'm selling Christmas trees. They're only a dollar apiece.
Oh, I've already got a tree.
Then I'll make it 50 cents.
But I don't need
a tree.
How
about a quarter?
Look, little boy.
I can arrange payments. Please take one, ma'am. These aren't ordinary trees, you know. They're magic.
Magic?
Yes, ma'am. You'd be surprised what miracles will happen if you buy one.
Well, a quarter isn't too much to pay for a miracle.
It's 50 cents.
I thought you said 25.
That's when you sounded tougher to sell.
Well, before I melt down to my coal buttons and the stovepipe hat, here's 50 cents.
You won't be sorry, ma'am. Here's a little tree.
Say, it's kind of cute at that. Would you like to come in and help me set it up?
Oh, I can't. I got to get right home. My sitter's been alone long enough.
Sitter? What about your mother and the firewood?
That's just a routine. My folks are attending a dinner the other bank presidents are giving for father.
With the pitch you've got, you'll have your own bank by the time you're 12.
Thanks a lot. Good night, lady, and Merry Christmas.
Same to you, you little underprivileged millionaire. I'll put this tree over here. Maybe we can find some extra trimmings for it in the morning.
Meow.
Minerva, will you stop gnawing on those pine needles? I wish I knew what made them so appetizing to her.
Meow. Oh.
Now, you come here and let those things alone. There we are. Well, I guess I'm not the only one that's spending Christmas Eve alone, without family or friends. But who can tell? Maybe Santa Claus has something up his big red sleeve that I don't even know about yet. Of course, I do have a squeaky rocker and Minerva. Jingle bells and merry stuff like that. Oh, what fun it is to rock with a big fat drunken cat. As I sat in the living room Christmas Eve with Minerva the cat on my lap, I couldn't help noticing that the tree which I'd bought from that wealthy urchin had a rather peculiar luminosity. Although there wasn't any artificial illumination, it seemed to glow from deep down in its branches. As I rocked back and forth, I started to get very drowsy. Oh, the little boy said this tree was magic, Minerva. I don't believe it either. Still, it is Christmas Eve. Some very strange things have happened on Christmas Eve. Huh? What's that? Oh. I must have been dozing. Coming! Well, it's Walter Denton. Come in, Walter.
Noel, Noel, Joy, use Noel.
Gracias. Come on into the living room, Walter.
Thanks, Miss Brooks. Here, I brought you this little gift to put under your tree.
Oh, that was very thoughtful, Walter. Put it under this tree over here.
Okay. Say, you got two trees, haven't you?
Yes, one for Minerva and one for me.
Meow. What?
Don't pay any attention to her. She's pine needle happy.
Well, Miss Brooks, as you know, I was supposed to spend the evening nestled snugly in the tight little confines of my own small immediate family circle.
For heaven's sakes, come out of there. You're giving me claustrophobia.
But I went to my father and mother and craved their permission.
Wait a minute, Walter. You craved their permission?
Yeah. Crave, craven, crove, isn't it?
Of course not. Crave. Let's see. Craven. After you craved their permission, what?
Well, they waived my presence for a long enough while for me to deliver to you, Miss Brooks, the little token of my esteem and affection, which is now ensconcing under the tree.
Walter, are you still in my English class?
Sure, Miss Brooks.
Well, I'd better bone up a little. One of us is going to flunk this term.
Well, what I'd like to say, Miss Brooks, is something that I've wanted to say for a long time.
Yes, Walter?
It's a little on the sentimental side, perhaps, for a so-called hep high school boy to be telling the teacher, but it's sincere, Miss Brooks.
I'm sure it is.
It's something I feel deep down inside of me, Miss Brooks, from whence so many of one's warmer emotions stem.
That's whence they stem from, all right.
Of course, even if it does seem over-sentimental or even downright sticky, Christmas Eve seems to be the time you can say things like this and not sound over-sentimental or sticky.
Christmas Eve is the time to say them. I just hope I hear them by New Year's Eve.
Well, what I want you to know, Miss Brooks, is that I'm grateful.
For what?
For my association with you during the past semester at Madison High School.
Well, thank you, Walter. I've tried to be a capable teacher.
Oh, your teaching was nothing. I don't mean scholastically. As a teacher, you were very adequate. I mean personally. The interest you took in me and my problems. For that, I could never thank you if I lived to be 100. Of course, you'd be gone a long time by then.
Why, oh, Noel, to you, too.
You don't know what it's meant to me to have your ear whenever I needed it.
It was nothing, really. I have another one.
Especially about girls. Gosh, remember how silly I used to act about girls? Every time one of them looked at me, I giggled like a kid. And then, overnight, I matured. I met the one woman who mattered. Harriet Conklin.
Ha ha ha! certainly made something out of you, Walter. I don't know what, but something.
And you saw me through the difficult transition period of that amour as well, while Harriet and I were adjusting to one another. It was wonderful to be able to come to you for advice, Miss Brooks. It isn't every boy who has such an interest taken in him by some intelligent, elderly person.
Give me back my ear. I can't hear you.
Not that you're ancient or anything. Gosh, I've seen girls who don't look as good as you do.
Girl? What do you think I am?
Yeah.
Shut up, Minerva.
By the way, Miss Brooks, I see you got lots of mistletoe on the walls. Were you expecting Mr. Boynton tonight?
Yes, Walter, I was. We were going for a wheelchair ride together. But he had to visit his folks upstate.
His folks? Gosh, they must be well along in years.
His father's over 50. They may shoot him next spring. Look, Walter, while you're here, you might as well pick up the little gift I got for you.
Oh, but you shouldn't have, Miss Brooks. Where is it?
Under the tree on your right. It isn't much, just a remembrance.
Oh, gee, I almost forgot. I can't open it yet.
Why not? Oh, you mean you want to put it under your tree at home and open it with your family?
Not exactly, but I'll get it later, Miss Brooks. There they are now. I'll answer it.
There who are now?
Come on in, folks. She was all alone when I got here.
And it's really a surprise, isn't it?
We should have stayed home Christmas Eve. Besides, it's freezing out.
Now, Osgood, don't be so grouchy. Hello, Miss Brooks. Merry Christmas.
Why, it's Mr. and Mrs. Conklin and Harriet. How are you all?
I'm cold.
Oh, that's too bad. Come here, Minerva. Rub up against Mr. Conklin.
What's that? Go away, cat.
She seems to like you, Osgood. Or is she hungry, Miss Brooks?
She's not that hungry.
I don't like cats. Why doesn't she go chase a mouse or something?
You forget, Mr. Conklin. This is Christmas Eve. There isn't one stirring.
Say, Harriet.
Yes, Walter?
There's a lot of mistletoe around this room.
I know. It's real pretty.
Osgood, notice all the mistletoe in this room.
What? Oh, that green stuff. More often than not, it makes me sneeze.
Oh, come on, Osgood. Let's see if it does.
Oh, now, Martha, don't embarrass me. I don't like that.
It doesn't make you sneeze, does it, Harriet?
I'm willing to find out. Here's a nice wreath of it on this wall.
Yeah. Well, here we are.
Yes, here we are.
If it's all right with Harriet, it's all right with us.
Well, come on, Walter. We're getting old.
Oh, gosh, you're sweet, Harriet.
Isn't that cute, Osgood? Oh, come here, dear. How about one for your faithful old wife?
Well, it is customary, I guess. There, I'm under the stuff.
Now pucker up, dear.
Very well, very well. You see, I told you. Achoo! Now, let's stop this romantic dribble and act like adult human beings. Miss Brooks, I'd like to take advantage of this visit to inquire as to your plans for the coming year's classwork. Do you have your schedule all laid out?
Frankly, Mr. Conklin, I haven't had much chance to work on anything.
You haven't had much of a chance, but you've been away from school all week. Your vacation started last Monday.
I know, Mr. Conklin, and that's what I took the week as. I mean, a vacation is something you go on when you get the opportunity to. You don't work on it or during it, unless, even though I didn't actually go anywhere, when my vacation came along, I went on it, or was on one, usually.
And you wanted to be the head of the English department.
Please, Osgood, this is no time to talk of school affairs. We're here to spend part of our holiday with Miss Brooks.
It was very nice of you to think about me, Mrs. Conklin. It was nice of all of you. I want to... Where are Walter and Harriet?
Denton, get my daughter away from that mistletoe at once.
But Mr. Conklin, Harriet isn't allergic to mistletoe.
No, but I'm allergic to you.
Harriet's almost irresistible sometimes, especially alongside of older women like Mrs. Conklin and Miss Brooks.
Sounds like the bell. I'll get it. Why, Mr. Boynton, come in.
Oh, thanks, Miss Brooks.
But I thought you were going upstate to see your folks.
I was, but they sent me a wire that they wanted to come here for about a week or so. They'll arrive in the morning, so I thought I'd drop this little gift off for you tonight.
Oh, but you shouldn't have. Where is it? Let's just put it under the tree in the living room. Look who's here, everybody.
Well, it's Mr. Boynton.
Hi there, Mr. B.
This is nice.
Hello, Boynton. Pretty cold out, isn't it?
Hello, folks.
This is beginning to get more like Christmas Eve every minute. Sit down, Mr. Boynton. I'm certainly glad your folks decided to visit you instead of vice versa.
Well, so am I. There's a particularly good reason why I'm glad.
There is?
Yes. It gives me a chance to see how my guinea pigs are affected by this cold snap. So far, they haven't reacted at all.
What do you expect them to do? Blow on their paws?
Brooks, have you pointed out the mistletoe to Mr. Boynton?
Oh, why don't you stop that nonsense, Martha?
It isn't nonsense. Mr. Boynton, look at the mistletoe.
Mistletoe? Oh, yes, a very interesting example of the flora found in various areas throughout the globe. An evergreen parasitic shrub, it is indigenous to the regions where apple trees and oaks abound.
Now that the lecture is over, may we ask questions?
Certainly, Miss Brooks.
Want to stand under it?
Stand under it? Well, you see, because of certain characteristics in its makeup, an allergy is sometimes aggravated by its presence.
I'll take a chance if you will.
Come on, Mr. Boynton.
Yeah, come on, Mr. Boynton.
Just bring him over to this wall here.
Well, I'll get under it if you like.
Well, don't just stand there. Can't you see Miss Brooks is cooking?
Well, don't fuss for me. I couldn't eat a thing.
Standing under the mistletoe signifies?
Well, I know what it signifies to most people, but to me, it's
Andrew! Well, there goes 85 cents worth of mistletoe.
I know what let's do. Let's open up the presents right now.
Swell! A splendid suggestion, Walter.
Shouldn't we wait until just before we leave? Might be less embarrassing that way.
Well, if you want to open them now...
Golly, this one tree's pretty crowded. I'll put some of these packages under this little one over here.
Well, look out, Walter. You're bumping into one of the branches. Look out!
Gosh, I got the funniest feeling when I touched that branch.
What kind of a feeling, Walter?
Well, you're Harriet Conklin, aren't you?
Well, sure I'm Harriet Conklin. Walter, what's the matter with you?
Nothing. Nothing's the matter with me. It's just that I want to tell you something. Harriet, you've got to change. You ought to try to be more like Miss Brooks.
Well, what do you mean, Walter?
If you want me to stay interested in you, you've got to be more alluring, youthful, glamorous, feminine in that real feline Brooks way.
Walter, have you been drinking pine needles, too?
Look at that tree. It seems to be glowing.
What do you mean, glowing? It's just the reflection from the streetlight. This party's giving me the meme. Holidays, indeed. Here, I'll just move the tree where it won't glisten in our eyes. Here we go.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
Why, Mr. Conklin?
Of course I'm Mr. Conklin. Happy-go-lucky, fun-loving, gag-a-minute Osgood.
Gag-a-minute Osgood?
Sometimes I've wanted to.
Miss Brooks, is that really you standing there?
I think so, Mr. Conklin. Why do you ask?
Because you suddenly look so different, so intelligent. Miss Brooks, I have made up my mind. You are now head of the Madison High English Department. Ha, 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 ha.
Well, thank you, fun-loving Osgood.
I'm going to put this wonderful tree where it belongs, right in the center of the room. Give me a hand, Boynton.
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Conklin. I'll just take this end here and... Miss Brooks?
Yes, Mr. Boynton?
Come here, baby.
What?
I said, come here, Connie.
You did She said, come here, baby, and I'm here.
Look, he's taking her over to the mistletoe.
Isn't it wonderful?
What are you going to do, Mr. Boynton?
Just call me Phil, Connie. And this is what I'm going to do.
I'm in a dream, Philip. A wonderful, beautiful dream. Mr. Boynton. Mr. Boynton. Mr. Boynton, where are you? Where did everybody go? Oh, I must have been dreaming. Well, that's real enough. I'll be right there. Oh, sorry, Minerva. I didn't mean to drop you.
I'm cold.
Why, it's the Conklins and Walter and Mr. Boynton. But you all just left. I mean, come in.
We thought it would be nice if we spent our Christmas Eve together, Miss Brooks.
Yes, and we brought a few little gifts over for you.
Now, I'll just put them under this tree here.
Yes, do that, Walter.
Aren't you going to ask me why I didn't go upstate, Miss Brooks?
I know why, Mr. Boynton. Your folks are coming down to see you.
How did you know that? I just got the telegram.
Don't let's get too carried away with the holidays. We've got to prepare for a hard school season ahead, Miss Brooks.
Oh, let's not talk about school affairs now, Osgood.
Walter, look at the mistletoe.
Yeah, look at it.
Now, just a minute. Before we go through all that again, would you please touch the tree, Mr. Boynton? The one on the left with the... Why, it's gone. There's only one tree.
Miss Brooks, are you all right?
Of course I'm all right. Could I have dreamt that part, too? Mr. Boynton, would you do me a favor, please?
Oh, of course, Miss Brooks. What is it?
Would you touch the Christmas tree?
Touch it?
Please,
but I...
it's important.
Oh, all right. There.
Nothing happened.
What did you expect would happen?
A miracle. Excuse me, I'll be right back.
I'm a little urchin, and I'm selling magic Christmas trees.
But you just came
here. Please buy one, lady. They only cost 50 cents apiece.
50 cents?
That's right.
Here's $2. Give me 4 of them.
Now, once again, here is Eve Arden.
From the bottom of my heart, to you in the audience... To you in every home, on every road, in every city and town, in the busy places and in the lonely places, oh, a very Merry Christmas to each of you. With our sponsor, the Colgate Palmolive Peat Company, who make Luster Cream Shampoo and Colgate Dental Cream, all of us here in the studio have gathered to wish all of you, throughout our beautiful and bountiful land, the most joyous of Christmases. And may these words ring round the world... and sink deep in the heart of everyone. Peace on earth, goodwill towards men. Merry, merry Christmas, everyone.
For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. Norris. Tune in Tuesday evening over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is floor. F-L-O-O-R.
Really?
You bet your life! The more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho! That's me, Groucho Marx.
Groucho!
Well, here I am again with $2,000 for one of our couples. Penniman, who's first to try for it?
Well, a male girl and a truck driver, Groucho. They were selected by our studio audience just before we went on the air. And their names are Diane Strumwasser and John Ryan. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers, and if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Diane Strumwasser and John Ryan. Where are you from, Diane?
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles?
Downtown Los Angeles.
Well, that's the outskirts, huh? And, John, you're wearing outskirts. No, no. John Ryan, you're the truck driver? Well, that's a good name for a truck driver. Where are you from, John?
I'm from the Columbine State.
Where?
Columbine State, Columbine Colorado. State.
Are you married?
No.
Why not?
Gosh, we never stay in one place long enough to really meet anyone, to know them well enough to get married.
See. What about you, Diane? Are you married?
No, sir.
Would you like to be?
Yes, of course.
May I ask one question?
Yes.
Why? Have you a nickname, Diane?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
Stromboli.
Stromboli? I must order that the next time I go to an Italian restaurant. Why Stromboli, Diane?
Well, that's what my section head, Papa Bull, calls me.
I beg your pardon?
That's what my section head, Papa Bull, calls me.
That's what your section head, Papa Bull, calls? Mm-hmm. You'll have to break that down, every word of it. I don't understand. Well, what is a section head and what is a Papa Bull?
Well, you see, I work at Prudential.
Prudential, the insurance company?
Yes, uh-huh.
See?
And we have section heads. And one of them's name is Bart Van Oostendorf. So we call him Papa Bull.
Why?
That's a good
what
question.
What has Van Oostendorf got to do with Papa Bull, huh?
Really nothing.
Nothing, huh? How old are you, Stromboli?
22.
And you, John?
I'm 28.
Well, you're the right age for each other. Where do you work,
Prudential Life Insurance.
What do you want me to call you, Diane or Stromboli?
Diane will be fine.
You work for the Prudential Life Insurance Company? Well, what is your policy with men my age?
Well, you'll have to take that up with Mr. Russell. He's the head of the new policy division.
Well, let's forget it, huh? What do you do at the insurance company?
Well, I'm a tripper.
You're a tripper?
Mm-hmm.
You mean you stand out on the sidewalk and trip people? So one of your insurance men can slip him a policy? What is a tripper, Stromboli?
Well, I deliver mail and telegrams and inter-office communications.
Well, why do they call you a tripper?
Because I take trips on the fourth floor.
Well, Diane, you said the secret word, and you and John split $100 between you.
Thank you.
Isn't that nice? Aren't you glad you're a tripper now, huh? John, who do you work for?
I'm at the Red Ball Transfer and Storage Company.
Oh, the Red Ball Express, the Red Ball Express. What do you haul in your truck, John?
We haul furniture.
Uh-huh. And where do you drive your truck?
We drive just anywhere.
Anywhere?
Anywhere.
Have you ever driven it to Honolulu? You better be more specific.
Well,
as a matter of fact, Honolulu's in the Pacific. How often do you drive your truck fully loaded?
Gosh, as often as we...
That's the kind of questions I have, huh? Require no answer at all. Are you insured, John?
Yes, we're insured.
Well, that's very wise. Suppose you were married to Diane. Would you want her to be insured?
Certainly.
How much insurance do you think a man ought to have on his wife?
$4,000 or $5,000.
How much insurance do you have on your truck?
Gee, overall we have about $170,000.
Let's get this straight. You would insure your wife for $5,000, your truck for $170,000. Diane, my advice to you is to get 16 wheels, a diesel motor, and have your oil changed every 1,000 miles. Well, you make a very cute couple, and if I ever want to send a message, I'll hire John's truck. Now, in just a minute, you're going to play You Bet Your Life for a chance at the $2,000. Right now, I want you to listen carefully to what Fenneman has to say.
Well, the winter months are here now. You should have gotten your car ready for whatever the weather has in store for us. It's very important to have that family car of yours starting quickly and running smoothly these days. This is why so many motorists have already driven in to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's. Others come in primarily because of the two great cars which DeSoto Plymouth dealers are so proud to handle. The magnificent DeSoto is a big car, with big car advantages, yet it handles like a dream. Stops on a dime, thanks to those big, big brakes. Gives more miles per gallon than you ever thought possible from a large, power-packed car. And of course, DeSoto lets you drive without shifting. And as for value, you'll be amazed how far your dollars go today when you buy a brand new DeSoto. Remember, too, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth, a car that you'll want to compare. So look for those two great names linked together. DeSoto, Plymouth.
Now, let's see if you two will get a chance at the $2,000. Fenneman, explain the rooms.
All right.
Rules with your customary charm.
Each of our three couples has $20. You get as much of that $20 as they want in each of four questions. And the couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the big question at the end of the show. Big question tonight is worth $2,000.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected Name the Song. Here's your first question. How much will you bet?
$10?
Yeah, betting, yes, $10.
Is that
all right,
John? Fine. $10
okay,
is fine.
Here we go. Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam and the deer and the antelope play.
Home on the range.
Home on the range is right.
And you're on your way. You have $30.
Even I knew the answer to that. All right, remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, you're going to bet how much of the 30?
Shall we bet 20?
Mm-hmm. Okay. How dear to my heart are the scenes of my childhood. With fond recollections, present them to view.
The old oaken bucket.
The old oaken bucket is right.
You're really climbing now. You have $50.
Now you got $50. Here's your third question. How much will you bet?
What do we have?
35.
Talk up, kids. Right.
35, 40.
How much 40. You going to bet?
40.
$40, okay. Daisy, Daisy,
bicycle bill for two.
I have $90.
Hey, give me a chance. I don't know if I can get a chance to sing like this. I only had one wheel of that bicycle. The answer. I was going to have a joke about wheeling, but never mind. Here we go. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. You have $90. How much of the 90 are you going to bet?
What do you want, 80 or all of it?
80.
$80, all right. For this valley, they say you are going. How does that go?
Where are the words?
I don't know this song. This song only came out 12 years ago. I don't know.
From this valley, they say you are going.
Oh. Red River Valley.
Red River Valley.
I'm glad they knew.
Wonderful, Diane. Put it there, kid. Put it there, John.
And you people wind up with a grand total of $170.
That really requires an F for music if they can decode it the way we sang it. Thanks and Merry Christmas from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Well, Groucho, the secret word is still floor. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a door-to-door salesman. This is Mr. Frank Santos over here. And his partner is a housewife from the studio audience, Mrs. Peggy Marshall. Folks, I'd like you to meet Groucho Marx.
Well, welcome to your Bet Your Life, folks. And if you say the secret word, you'll split $100. It's a common word, something you see every day. Now, let's see. Your name is Peggy Marshall, and this is Frank Santos, huh? Where are you from, Frank?
I'm from Ripon, California.
Where?
Ripon, California.
Ripon?
Right.
Where is Ripon?
That is north of Modesto, about 10 miles.
And where is Modesto? And Peggy Marshall, where are you from, Peggy?
Originally, I'm from Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn?
Mm-hmm.
And where's Brooklyn?
Well, it's not in Texas.
There is a Brooklyn in Texas.
Well, this Brooklyn is part of New York.
I see. Oh, you're a housewife. What kind of a house are you married to? Rambling two-story type?
No, husband.
Oh, you're married to a husband. Well, I've known rambling two-story husbands. However, that's another story, huh? Now, what sort of work does your husband do?
He's a salesman in a watch concern.
Oh.
Swan Watch Company.
And how did you meet him?
I met him at a Halloween dance. I was standing around waiting to be asked to dance, and along
You were standing around waiting?
Well, I looked different when I was younger. Marriage aged me.
Apparently, it's improved you, too.
Along came this horse, and...
Along came this horse?
Yes. Well, it was a Halloween dance.
Oh, I see. Well, they usually have a horse at a Halloween dance.
And
he asked you for a dance?
Yes. And I was a little confused because I never danced with a horse before.
He took the bit right in his teeth and asked you for a dance, huh?
Well,
he was just sowing his wild oats, I guess, huh? What kind of a horse was it? A Palomino?
No, it was a black and white horse, and the fellow that impressed me the most was the one that was at the back end. Well, there were two fellows.
I see.
He'll never forgive me for this.
Mr. Santos, huh?
That's right.
You're a house-to-house salesman. Who do you work for, Frank?
Jewel Tea Company.
The Jewel? And what do you do for them?
Well, we sell coffee and household articles.
In other words, you're a door-to-door salesman, huh?
Yes.
Well, when the husband comes to the front door, you go out the back door? Is that
That's
it?
Right.
Well, that can be fun. Now, tell us some more about your business. What's your most popular item?
Coffee.
Why is that?
Well, coffee is perhaps the most popular beverage, and our coffee is roasted and ground fresh.
I see. Now, Peggy, do you think if you made bad coffee for your husband that'd be grounds for divorce?
No, but what I did tonight will be.
That's an old joke, but then who isn't, huh? What did you do tonight, Peggy?
The way I described him, I didn't mean it that way.
Oh, I don't think he's going to take offense at that. He knows that you were only fooling in a Halloween party. People dress in all kinds of curious and queer costumes. Look at the outfit I've got on. How many different items do you carry in this?
Carry about 400.
Buggy of yours, huh?
About 400.
How do you carry so many items from door to door?
Well, we carry them in a ton walk-in truck.
A walk-in truck? You mean your truck walks right into people's houses? What is your truck like?
Well, it has shelves in it, and inside the truck we have groceries and household articles, and the customers can walk right in and look at it if they wish.
Mm-hmm. How do your customers feel about walking into your truck?
They like it.
Is that so? Last time I walked into a truck, I spent 4 months in a hospital. How do you get new customers, Frank?
By soliciting.
Soliciting?
By soliciting.
Well, let's hear how you sell Mrs. Marshall here. How would you approach her? Go ahead.
How do you do? I'm Mr. Sanders with Jewel Tea Company.
Certainly left her cold. Can you tell a good prospect from the outside of the house, Frank?
Yes, I can. Well, if you're going by a house and you see in the backyard, you see on the line perhaps a long nightgown, you could imagine that some old maid lived there.
You still think that old maids wear nightgowns, huh?
Yeah, probably do.
Frank, you're living in a fool's paradise. Now, if you went by Peggy's house, could you tell her age by the kind of pajamas on her clothesline?
Oh, I'd probably come close.
Not of her husband's home. Peggy, do you agree with him? Could he tell your age by your pajamas?
No.
Why not?
I don't wear pajamas.
Well, that's a pretty raw statement. How did we ever get into this conversation? A minute ago, we were discussing coffee. Well, you're an interesting couple, and Frank, if you knock on my door, just remember, the man of the house isn't home. Now then, we're going to play your bet your life. Let's see how well you make out in the race with the $2,000. You've got to run your $20 into more than our other couples. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenham is going to remind our listeners.
The mail girl and the truck driver won $170.
Now, let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected motion picture trademarks. Here's your first question. How much of the $20 will you risk?
Ten.
$10, that's a good, safe beginning. What motion picture company is identified by a roaring lion?
MGM.
MGM is right. And they're on the way. They have $30. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 are you going to try?
30.
What company uses a revolving globe as its trademark?
Would that be,
Warner Brothers?
No, Columbia?
No, no. No, I'm sorry. It's Universal International. Now you're broke.
Well, we were not going to let them go home, Brooke.
We cannot let them go home without any money. I'll give you one more question, and if you get it right, you'll win $10. Who was buried in Grant's tomb? General Grant is right. I told you that, huh? So long, Frank. Thanks, and Merry Christmas from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Roger, the secret word is still floor. We invited some men from a winery and some women from a public steam bath to the program tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected masseuse Karen Eperman. Her partner is Mr. Rome Cook, and here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, welcome, folks, to You Bet Your Life. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you see every day. Karen Eperman, is that right?
Eperman.
Eperman, huh? Yes. And the man from the Rome Cook?
That's right.
That's your name, huh? Yeah, Karen? How do you pronounce it, Karen?
Karen.
What kind of a name is that?
It is from his Swedish name.
I see. You're a masseuse, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Where are you from? Akron, Ohio?
No.
I thought all masseuses came from Akron, Ohio. Now, you must ask me why. Go ahead.
Why are old masseuses from Akron, Ohio?
Because that's the rubber capital of America. I, Groucho Marx, solemnly swear never to use that joke again. Rome Cook, is that, that's your name?
That's my
that's
name.
That's an odd name. I know that Rome Bynes, but I didn't know Rome Cook. So.
My name was Cookie, but it was shortened to Cook.
Your name was Cookie?
Cookie.
And it was shortened to Cook, huh?
That's right.
Where are you from?
Rome, Italy.
Rome, Italy, huh?
That's right.
Is that why your first name is Rome?
Must be.
You were named after the city of Rome.
Must be.
Why did you come to California?
Well, the weather condition is very nice here.
Aren't they similar to the weather conditions in Italy?
No, it's not.
They're not?
It's great sunshine here. It can't be beat.
And there isn't any... There's a Hungarian out front, huh? Now, as a masseuse, what do you do, Karen?
I give massage and a steam bath and...
Sounds like ticklish work. How's business at your steam bath?
Oh, we are pretty busy now.
Mm-hmm. Got your hands full, huh?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, let's go back to Rome. All roads lead to Rome, don't they, Cookie? Let's see, you work for a winery?
Gallo Wine Company.
With which, the Gallo?
Gallo Wines.
Gallo Wines. Do they make just Gallos? Do they make quarts and pints, too, or just Gallos?
Oh, yes, yes.
Are you married, Cookie?
Yeah, I am.
You have any little grapes at home?
Yes, four.
Four?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's quite a bunch, eh? You must be married to a clinging vine. Now, Rome, do you drink wine yourself?
I do.
Very much?
Well, 3 glasses a day, ever since I can remember.
How long can you remember after 3 glasses? Cookie, why do you drink wine with every meal?
It's a habit. Wine makes meal taste much better.
Have you ever heard of a product called water?
Water? Oh, yes.
Why does the average woman come into your steam bath, Karen, to let off steam?
She wants to take off some pounds or put them on or to relax.
Suppose I wanted you to give me the full treatment. What would I do first?
I give you a private room and give you a sheet and slippers.
I look like Julius Caesar by this time.
You take a mineral bath. Then I put you in an electric cabinet.
What's that?
It's a big, long box with...
Wait a minute, you... You want to put me in a long box?
Yes, but it's
I've already got the sheet, huh? I may look like I'm ready for a box, but if you don't mind, I'll wait a while. And I'm not ready for all that heat either. I'll be there soon enough. How long do I stay in this mortuary, huh?
You stay about 10, 15 minutes on one side, and then you turn over on the other side again. 10, 15 minutes.
Wait a minute, don't no basting? 15 minutes on each side?
Yes.
All right, my body is being roasted. I'm soaking in mineral oil, and I wish I was home. What's next?
Then I put you on a big marble table.
That's logical. I've got the sheet on, I'm in a pine box, and I'm on a marble slab. By this time, I'm in great shape, huh? Now, why the marble slab?
I had to brush you with salt with a big brush and try to get the old, just as an old floor rub hard.
Well, you said it, Karen. You said floor. Karen, you said floor, and you and Mr. Cookie over here split $100 between you.
Wonderful.
Well, you've both been very interesting, but I still don't know whether to spend my time at Karen's steam bath or at Cookie's winery. Karen, why should I want one of your steam massages?
You feel wonderful, relaxed after a massage.
Good, that settles it. If I want to be relaxed, I'll see Karen. And if I want to be stiff, I'll see Rome Cookie. I now pronounce you wine, woman, and song. Now you're going to play your bet your life. You beat our other two couples, and you'll get a chance at the $2,000 DeSoto Plymouth question. I can't tell you how much our other couples won, but Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners.
The mail girl and the truck driver are still ahead with $170.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected major cities of the world. Here's your first question. How much will you bet?
Ten.
In what country is the city of Cairo?
Egypt.
Egypt is right. They have $30. You've got $30. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of your $30 will you bet on your second question?
25.
25. Okay. In what country is the city of Baghdad? Talk it over.
Do you know?
You ought to know this. You're both
Afghanistan.
I'm sorry. It's Iraq.
They've dropped to $5 now.
That's a shame. Yes. You're down to $5. Well, how much are you going to bet? The five?
Five.
Here's your third question. You're going to bet $5. In what country is the city of Vancouver?
Canada.
Canada is correct. And you're climbing again. You have $10. Now you got $10. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the ten?
Ten.
$10. In what country is the city of Warsaw?
What?
Warsaw. W-A-R-S-A-W.
Russia.
No. I'm sorry, it's Poland. You should have known that.
But Warsaw. Oh, yeah, excuse me. Yeah.
You didn't like my pronunciation?
No, I didn't like it.
I didn't care much for it myself. Well, now, let's give him another question.
Sure.
They were confused. Yeah. I'll give him another question.
No,
okay. Yeah. In what country is the city of Buenos Aires?
Argentina.
Argentina is right. That's right.
And they wind up with a grand total of
$20. You wind up with a grand total of $20.
And that means the mail girl and the truck driver, with $170, get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question.
Well, give me the question, and in just a minute, they'll have a chance to win $2,000.
No matter what make of car you drive, folks, it will pay you to go to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer, whether it's for an emergency or a routine checkup. There you get expert, courteous service at the lowest possible cost. In fact, that's a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's everyday way of doing business. Now, DeSoto Plymouth dealers are able to accomplish this because they have highly skilled mechanics in their shop. And these service experts work with specially designed tools and the most modern equipment. From the records they keep on your car, they're able to tell you, for example, when your engine is in need of a tune-up or a lubrication job. They'll tell you when your tires should be rotated to add thousands of miles to their life. So, for the best from your car, drive in where you get the best service at the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here's the winning couple, Groucho, the male girl and the truck driver, all set for the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question.
All right, here we go for $2,000. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully. And please, no help from the audience. Here we go. Kansas farmers still plow up pieces of ancient Spanish armor. Who was the Spanish commander who led his forces up through the Middle West and claimed it for Spain in 1540? All right, what is the answer you two have decided upon?
Cortez.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Francisco Coronado. That's the correct answer. So that means the big question next week will be worth $2,500. Well, you lost the big money, but you won how much?
They won $170 in the quiz.
$170 in the quiz, and you won $100 in the secret word. That's $270. Congratulations, and thanks to both of you. Thank you.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $2,500. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Here's a reminder from the National Safety Council. Good visibility is the first essential of good driving. Always keep your windshield clean. You Bet Your Life, transcribed from Hollywood, is produced by John Goodell, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jerry Fielding. This is George Fenneman signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.